All right, what's going on, everyone out there on the interwebs? It's Jeremy, aka NES Ruler 22. Welcome to episode number 10, the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. As always, I am joined by my co-host. We got JP, aka Double Shot J, and the man himself, Moods 616. So we got a full show for you guys tonight. As always, gonna jump into the news with JP, and we're gonna be jumping into the question of the week, which is our top five favorite supernatural films. Then we'll be hopping into our movies that we watched this week, and we're going to be ending up. And oh wait, Moods, are you doing a mood swing?
Yes, I am.
All right, so after the top five, we'll be hopping into mood swings. Then we'll be doing our pick of the week, movies that we watched this week. Then we'll be hopping into a discussion on the 1982 film, The Entity, which is a pretty interesting film, but we'll get into that when we get around to it. So
81.
It came out, it debuted in 82 in, like, the United Kingdom.
Oh, yeah, damn.
Our release is actually from 81, though.
Okay, I think the U.S. release is actually 83, actually, too. So that's pretty interesting.
So, JP, you want to start with the news?
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. What do you guys want first? Here's some interesting news. This is one of the news pieces that I found probably most interesting this week. And that is that Killjoy 5 has been announced. It's called Killjoy 5 Psycho Circus.
Awesome.
Killjoy gets better with each film. Now one is terrible.
I was
two
just gonna say
is a little better, but still terrible. 3 is pretty good, and 4 is even better.
So this one has a lot to live up to, really.
Yeah, because if it breaks that pattern, that's not good.
No, you can't go back to the, you know, part 1 quality. It just doesn't work.
Jeremy, are you familiar with the Killjoy films?
I think we talked about this before. I've not seen any of them.
Dude, I'm going to be honest. One,
I haven't watched any of these fucking franchises. I feel like a fucking homo. I haven't watched anything.
I don't know why that'd make you feel like a homo, but...
Okay, it makes me feel like I'm a loser.
Which you are.
Oh, thank you, JP. I appreciate that, a.k.a. Pee Wee Hater. Anyway, back to Killjoy.
No, so Killjoy 1 is actually one of the worst films I've ever seen. It really is bad, bad.
You know, even for Full Moon, like, you know, it's a low-budget film, but it actually is a bad Full Moon picture.
How's that possible?
Awful, dude. It is
not
so
every
bad.
Full Moon is bad.
No, there's actually some really, really fun Full Moon films, but this one just, it is actually a bad film. I agree with JP.
Honestly, I gave it more credit than it ever deserved when I reviewed it a while ago, like last year. It really is, like, in the top five worst films I've ever seen. It's not quite Beneath the Mississippi bad, but...
Here we go with the Mississippi. Here we go with the Mississippi.
So, this is actually going to be premiering on Full Moon Streaming. It hasn't been wrote yet. I don't think the script's written yet or anything has been officially, like, started, but it has been announced and they plan on having it premiere in late 2014.
Killjoy 5. We got Killjoy versus the Ginger Dead Man versus the Evil Bong.
That wouldn't be bad. But...
That would actually be really fun.
Wait, we have to think of a subtitle though to go beneath Killjoy 5 with all those JP, sorry.
Just ridiculous.
So it actually says that it's going to be premiering in an episodic format. I'm thinking maybe like 10-minute, 15-minute episodes, which is odd.
That is annoying.
Yeah, it's annoying. Like, wait till next week to see what happens next. Like, I don't want to fight. It's
like a serial.
Movie. It's a Killjoy movie, not a fucking fucking serial
but,
from the 30s.
You know, if they're doing it in 50-minute intervals, I mean, it's only going to be about 5 episodes because every Full Moon film is like 70 minutes.
Yeah, so Full Moon is really, like you'll see later in the news too, Full Moon is really pushing this Full Moon streaming thing. You can actually get, I believe, 6 DVDs if you subscribe for a year.
3.
It's 6.
I think 3 is for the half year.
Yeah, 3 is for the half year. 6 is for the full year. It's not a bad idea, and Charlie Band, good old Charlie Band, has
Oh,
always
Charlie
been
Band.
has always been a
Scratch your butt cheeks.
He's always found a way to get into whatever is happening in the world. Like the video boom of the, you know, 80s and 90s, like he was the Full Moon was a very popular brand in that time. Like everybody remembers renting Full Moon films.
Mm-hmm.
And he even, like, if you go to any Redbox, which is, you know, foreign to you Canadians up there.
And the rest of the world.
there's Full Moon titles in Redbox. Like these other companies have not been able to get their titles into Redbox. You know, Troma or any of those other companies putting out stuff like that has not gotten into Redbox. But Charlie Band has found a way. So he's kind of always been, like, a front runner in, like, whatever, you know, new happening in the world of, like, entertainment. He's always kind of been pushing his way into everything. So the streaming service should be no different, I guess. We'll see how it pans out, but they're really pushing it hard.
That's what she said.
But you know, so what? With those free DVDs, like, honestly, you still got to pay for the, you still have to pay for the shipping. And my God,
no, you
shipping $79.99 to Canada.
Dude, seriously, it was like $65 or something. Crazy shit.
Yeah, we don't have to pay for that. I believe if you're in the United States or the continental United States, you get it shipped free. I believe. I'm not sure. I did look at it briefly. I'm not really that interested because
I didn't see the free shipping even in the States, but you could be right. But yeah, the shipping to Canada was just like outrageous, $80. Man. It was like out of this world. It was like paying for 2 years, 2 year subscriptions, man. You know, it was ridiculous, man. I don't know.
So what do you think about the streaming service in general, the idea of it?
He's copying the WWE.
Well, actually, that's a completely different service.
The Full Moon, I think it's a decent idea. I mean, I have no problem with it. I prefer to obviously watch my physical copies of my movies. But at the same time, you know, if you're out and, you know, you have that access to that, you know, that whole catalog of films, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. You know, you're sitting in your hotel room one night, flipping through the channels, and you're like, ah, I don't want to watch fucking garbage TV. Grab your laptop and start watching
Head of the
Full
Family.
Moon streaming. Exactly. See, it's actually very convenient. I do like it, you know.
See, I'm just not somebody who's going to use it. Like, I have Netflix. I barely ever turn on Netflix. I have so many DVDs. I just don't need it. It doesn't really appeal to me. And that's the thing, that Full Moon is for a very specific and, like, you know, core audience. That is it really going to appeal to that type of audience who are probably already mostly DVD collectors? And that's my thing. I don't know. They're not really, are they going to be able to break out from just the Full Moon fans?
I have no idea. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of the same way with Netflix too. Like, I have it and I barely ever, I mean, I watch it here and there. If, you know, if there is a film on there that I need to watch that I don't have, I'll check it out. But I understand where you're coming from, though. It's, you know, I prefer, you know, to watch my physical copies, like most collectors, really, right? It's just, it's always like Netflix and the streaming option is more of a second thought for me, really.
Yeah. I think that making your brand new film's debut on Full Moon streaming definitely has its pluses, because that kind of does interest me. If I want to see Unlucky Charms before it's released on DVD, yeah, okay, maybe I'll sign up for Full Moon streaming for a month. Especially if you throw in a free DVD or something like that, like they are doing right now. Or if there's a new Puppet Master film, I might want to see that on Full Moon like right away. So yeah, I mean, the whole episodic format thing, I don't know. They're trying to make it a series now, which is just, I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. The thing that scares me, though, you know, about Charles Band premiering these films on the streaming is that, you know, I mean, if it ever got to the point where he just keeps on doing that and then there's no physical media for these films anymore, I have a major problem with that.
Yeah, well, I think you know, all of us collectors are against the digital only type
thing.
Yeah, totally, 100%. But like, you know, I mean, I don't think Full Moon is going to change the entire industry, but you know, at the same time, it's still a step in that direction. You know, starting to premiere these films, it's just cheaper.
Yeah,
you know, people are buying these subscriptions and it's paying for it, and like all of a sudden, why do we have to press up these? I'm like, fuck, like that would piss me off. You know?
I don't think that'll happen because they still do sell a lot of DVDs. And I think the smart thing to do would be to create these films, you know, say Puppet Master 11, and debut it on fullmoonstreaming.com. And then don't, you know, say we're going to put out a DVD, but we're not going to put it out for 3 months. You know, if you want to see it now, you have to see it on Full Moon Streaming. And I think that way would get a lot more people interested in it. And I'm not sure if that's completely what they're doing now, but it seems like everything that's coming out is debuting on there. But I don't know how much delay they're taking between the debut and the actual DVD being released.
Well, I think the only reason why they sell so many DVDs is because they fucking sold the Killjoy and Puppet Master movies to freaking Echo Bridge, and they're releasing them in those sets for like 4 cents. So,
yeah, I mean, but even before that, like the Full Moon does their yearly Valentine's Day sale, which is coming up, yeah. And everything's like half off. I bought a lot of stuff off of Full Moon fullmoondirect.com or whatever.
I don't even go to that website because the shipping is like it's actually some of the worst. It's ridiculous, man. It's worse than Troma. It's insane.
Full Moon does fun stuff. They do the grab bags and stuff. I know Jordan, JR something something, bought a lot of Full Moon stuff a lot of times. But the thing is, like, those Echo Bridge sets just pissed me off because when I seen that you can get all 9 Puppet Master movies for $5 and I spent like $50 on my box set, I was pretty bummed out.
Yeah, but they're probably like VHS rip ass copies transfers.
Yeah, also, those transfers are shit on those.
And they're on like 2 DVDs, 12 movies on 2 DVDs.
Like I said, Charlie Band crowbars his films into these services and you know, stores because Dollar General was carrying Full Moon box sets like 2 Halloweens ago, and I bought the Witchboard set and I think the Evil Bong set and the Killjoy set there. And they were like $8, I think, a piece for the trilogies and stuff. So that was, I mean, that was pretty cool. Anyway, we're spending way too much time on
Full Moon. Yeah, we talked about this for 12 minutes.
Okay, so next up in the news, Full Moon Streaming. they actually have partnered with Blue Underground, and they're going
to
debut 50 of Blue Underground's more lesser-known titles on Full Moon Streaming.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So, I mean, I think partnering with these other companies can definitely make this like the horror Netflix because they have their Full Moon stuff, they have their Grindhouse stuff, their Moonbeam stuff, all their sub-labels of Full Moon. And now they're having Blue Underground titles on there. I seen The Church was one of them, and there was a few other ones that I was familiar with. But that's interesting.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good thing I own pretty much the entire Blue Underground catalog, but
like, yeah, but so. Is it, I think that one of the things that that can really push Full Moon is if they can get a hold of stuff that isn't on DVD and, you know,
put it on Full
Moon streaming. So yeah. And besides that, I did hear briefly that they are doing another thing where they're kind of taking people's films, you know, like fan films, and kind of like sifting through them and picking some like good ones and putting them in a certain section where you can check them out and you can vote on them. And then if you get like 50 people to subscribe to Full Moon Feature or Full Moon Streaming, then they will actually press up and distribute your physical copies of that
film. That's pretty cool.
All you filmmakers out there, you know, that could
that's
be
a really good idea.
That's cool.
Well, I mean, I can't say that Charlie Band has like the intentions to like help people.
Oh, he'll never. I bet you he's gonna do this. But he's gonna do this, and he's gonna press like 4 DVDs.
No, I believe it'll be legit because 50 subscribers, man, that's that's a hard thing to do, but I think it's interesting and it can be beneficial to both people, you know, the full moon and, you know, filmmakers. Anytime there's chances for people to get their, you know, art out in the world, it's good stuff to me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I totally agree.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Okay, so full moon streaming could be pretty cool if they keep pushing with these partnerships and stuff. Let's move on. AMC is working on a Preacher, which is based on a comic book TV series with Seth Rogen.
Hmm. Is Seth Rogen on TV?
Preacher.
I actually just saw this on Facebook the other day. I wasn't really too sure exactly what it was. I'm not familiar with the comics.
Wait,
so.
Wait, can I add in a comment about something? Do you hear that James Franco is going to be directing the movie based on the book The Disaster Artist, which is about The Room, and he's going to be making a biopic on Tommy Wiseau, and it's going to get distributed.
Did not know this.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I don't even know what you just said.
James Franco. I'm unfamiliar James with Franco.
Everything you said.
Hey, James Franco is directing a biopic on Tommy Wiseau from The Room.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I understand what you said. I'm just completely unfamiliar with any of that.
You don't know what The Room is?
No. Should I?
Oh, it's only the worst movie ever made. How do you not know about The Room?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know about the worst movie ever made, which I was pretty certain was Beneath the Mississippi, so...
No, you haven't seen The Room, so... It's a and cult movie.
You haven't
movie.
Seen Beneath the Mississippi. All right,
it's probably the biggest cult movie ever made.
So that also means that it isn't as bad as Beneath the Mississippi, because anytime something gets cult status, it automatically has some value to it.
Hey, Moods, you want to back me up on this, please?
I've actually never seen the movie, but I know exactly what it is, but I've never seen it, so I can't comment.
Man, you guys are weirdos. Never seen The Room.
I've heard lots of people talk about it and how bad it is, so that's pretty awesome.
Okay, sorry. Continue about
Preacher. Preacher. I guess it has kind of a following. It's the story sounded kind of interesting. Guaranteed, since it's being, you know, adapted, that it's not going to be like super close to the source material, because nothing ever is. But I thought it sounded interesting. And AMC has been pretty good with their TV shows as of late. That's happening. After that, we have this is another full moon thing that I forgot to throw in there. They're actually trying to get into another market, and that is the horror magazine, which is kind of like a dead, you know, it's like a dead thing almost. But there's like Fangoria, Rue Morgue, and Horror Hound, which are like the big ones. But is there really room for another company to jump in there?
Of course. Why not?
It's called Delirium Magazine. It's going to be bi-monthly, and it's $45 for a year subscription. Yeah, you would think if they're trying to jump into that market, they might start off with a little bit of
Fangoria
it.
Is expensive as fuck.
$45 for a whole year is so cheap.
Yeah, I was going to say Fangoria is a lot.
Really? That's what Horror Hound is.
What?
Horror Hound's only $45 a year.
Yeah, and there's only six magazines. Yeah.
That's bi-monthly. This is bi-monthly also.
Oh, I thought you said monthly.
No, bi-monthly.
Okay, well... Yeah, I guess so. It's six magazines. Yeah, it's still not that bad. What is it, like $6.50 or $7 a magazine? That's still not too bad.
Yeah, but you're talking about a magazine that's like unproven and we don't know like anything about. Like, at but least I think it's start just, off for the first like 3 months at a discounted rate or something.
I don't know. It's not overly that bad. I mean, is this magazine?
Delirium magazine.
Why not? I'd give it a shot. I have no problem All with right. it.
Let
I mean,
me
is it going to be in? Is it going to be in 3D?
If you're stoned.
Ugh, God, reading 3D magazines is just gives me a headache already.
Delirium magazine. That full moon's trying that. I don't know. It looked kind of interesting, but I don't really know what they're going to do. Like, what are they going to like? Are they going to hire a bunch of writers, or like
maybe
are they
going to have
self-producing?
Maybe they're going to have pop-ups and it's going to be in 3D. Maybe that's the
wouldn't surprise me.
Ah.
After that, we have Joe Dante jumping back in the filmmaking horror world. He's joining an anthology with, I forgot who the other guy was. I didn't write it down. It's going to be called Fear Paris, and it's like an anthology set in Paris or something. I don't know much about it, but it sounds interesting. So, yeah. Hmm. Anthologies are always cool, and, you know, Paris.
They always catch my interest.
All right, after that, we have some DVD announcements. We have The Visitor and Miss 45, put out by Draft House Films.
Okay.
That comes out March 4th for The Visitor, and Miss 45 comes out March 25th. Do you know these films?
Yeah, Miss 45 is, I think, a film that came out in 1981.
It's a rape revenge film, I know that.
Yeah.
I know of that one. The Visitor, I believe, has Lance Henriksen in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of which Visit, because there's a couple different movies. I'm not sure exactly which one that is, but I don't know. Is Draft House a new company?
No.
Draft House, nope. I think, right?
Nope. They've been out for a few years. Have a few of their movies.
What else have they put out?
You want movies that you would not know that I have?
Like The Room?
The FP.
Oh, so they're like non-horror flicks and stuff.
Yeah. You know what The FP is?
No.
Okay.
Well, are you going to elaborate on that? Or
it's an underground cult of people who play DDR, a.k.a. Dance Dance Revolution, and they have battles, and then they kill themselves. It's like a cult. It's like a gang of people who play DDR in like an underground arena.
Wow.
Are you a member of this cult? Said cults?
No, but I know that it was a huge movie in the community when it came out. It was funny.
Oh.
Yikes. Yep. Already. Yep, just read the synopsis and it will explain everything.
Okay. Those films are coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. Then we have Hell of the Living Dead and Rats Night of Terror, put out by Blue Underground, slated for 2014. It's a Blu-ray double feature.
Ooh, Rats of Terror, nice.
Oh, they're doing double features? Yeah.
You know what, man? I used to hate double features until I realized I don't have space. And now I'm starting to not mind them so much.
You know, to be honest, I don't think I'll upgrade to, you know, for a double feature. But if they were on solo releases, I'd do it. Kind of weird like that. But
dude, I'm going to run out of space eventually. And you're going to be like, man, those double features are looking pretty good right now.
But you know what? To be honest, man, like I love both those films. But I'm pretty happy with my DVDs, though. I'm actually,
yeah,
ironically enough, my Rats, either, my Rats Nights of Terror is actually sitting right in front of me.
Which the Anchor weird, Bay.
But... Yeah, but I don't know, man. Double features, nah, whatever, I'll pass.
After that, we have Scream Factory releasing The Final Terror. This is coming out in July-ish. This is a first-time release on DVD or, Blu-ray, DVD or Blu-ray.
Yes, it is. I'm very... See, now, this is exactly what Scream Factory needs to be doing. I think they redeem themselves. Like, you know, I think...
I don't know, man. I like everything. I like the idea that they do, like, a few different things. I just wish they would do more of these.
Yeah. I mean, I was... Like I said, you know, we talked about... I think a lot of people kind of took what I said the wrong way. It's not the fact... I don't, you know, dislike Lake Placid at all. I just thought it was a very odd choice for Scream Factory. But then the very next day they announced, you know, The Final Terror, and I was like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is exactly what I want from Scream Factory. So it seemed like a really awesome redemption for myself.
Do you know anything about this film? Like, have you seen it?
I've never seen the film, no. But an 80s slasher I haven't seen? See, that's amazing. That's
cool.
But that's kind of like, you know, I mean, we talked about this before, and this is where Scream Factory kind of started out, you know, with these 80s, a little more mainstream films, you know, with Halloweens and stuff. But
yeah, but that was just to get everybody's attention.
Well, totally, totally. But these are the type of films that I was really hoping that I was going to see a lot more of. And, well, at least we're starting to get them, so that's good.
After that, Scream Factory announced House in the Alley. This is a Vietnamese film, and that's slated for May 27th. But I think a lot of people miss this part, and that is that it's a DVD only.
Yep.
Yeah. I was actually quite confused about that.
Yeah, they said that it's basically to port it over and put it on Blu-ray, the cost would be more than what they would make, they're saying. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah. You know what? I mean,
stop being a bunch of pansies about it.
It kind of.
I'm not, because I need stuff to go next to my four packs that they put out and my TV tears and the other DVDs. Because if they, I don't want them to just put out like three DVDs and then that's all the DVDs they ever put out. Well, I'm fine with this one.
I honestly
Chilling
think that
Senses is only on DVD, isn't it?
No, it's
no.
Not.
Okay,
I have it on Blu-ray. Right. But I think they'll end up putting out more of those horror marathon four packs. I think
they need to, because stop at volume two, that's so lame.
Yeah, I think those things have sold really well, but we need people to buy the TV tears because I want to see a bunch of volumes of those.
Yeah,
I really dig the TV tears.
See them put out what is it called? It's I reviewed it on one of the collaboration channels. It's damn it. It's about these two girls who are calling, prank calling people, and they accidentally call somebody who just murdered somebody. Oh, it's called like I Saw What You Did or something, or I Know Who You Are or something like that. I would like to see them put out that TV movie. There's a remake and an original, and I think the remake's like out of print or hasn't been released.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
After that, Scream Factory announced The Battery, which is a 2012 film. It's like a dark comedy. Three title announcements in 1 week. That's awesome.
I was really surprised about The Battery because I've heard actually pretty good things about that film. And yeah, Scream Factory picked it up. That's a bonus. Don't y'all think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that they pick up. Like I said before, I like how they have their little like subcategories of all the types of films they put out. It's cool.
Yeah, it's turning into an interesting year because they, you know, with all these new announcements and stuff, man, it's going to be a good one.
Summer of Fear.
Exactly right.
So Mark Jones, anybody know who that is?
Nope.
He was the writer of like all the Leprechaun movies. All
right.
There's a website called Dread Central.
Okay, I know that site.
They started this like live or like this weekly video show where they sit down with somebody. I didn't watch it, but I kind of read like the news from it. I plan on checking it out because it actually looks really, you know, well put together and interesting. So shout out to them, you know, check out this stuff that they're doing. But they had Mark Jones on there, the writer of like I think all the Leprechaun movies, all six original films. So he says that he's working on a new, and I don't really like that he said this, but he said he's working on a new franchise because I don't think you can really do that. I don't think you can think of something as a franchise before it takes off. I think that's just
wrong
to do.
I disagree though, man, because maybe he already wrote like four scripts. He already wrote like the first four films. He just created a whole new franchise. I mean, it's possible, right? That's all I'm saying.
It is, but it's just, I think he's getting a little ahead of himself, judging by what I'm about to say next. he's working on it, and it's called Vampricon.
Oh, God.
Did you just say Vampricon?
Yes. Half vampire, half leprechaun. Sure, Warwick Davis.
Okay.
Oh, man.
This might be the hardest I've ever laughed on this podcast. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Yourself if you think you're going to create a new franchise.
Vampricon? I'm going to be thinking about this all night.
The stupidest sounding thing ever. He said that he's, you know, he wants to do it with Warwick. And you know what I think it is, dude?
No way.
I think he just wants to make more Leprechaun movies, but can't legally do it. So he's like, shit, well, I'll just add some stupid gimmick to it, and I'll make him be bit by a vampire, and I'll get Warwick Davis to do it. I'll make all the fucking Leprechaun movies I want, and I'll call him Vampricon, and Vampricon Back to the Hood, and Vampricon in
the Old West. I would literally watch 10 movies called Vampricon. That is just ridiculous, man. So
you just cut it off after 10. It's like, all right, now
I would marathon that up, man. Like, I want – that sounds – to me, like, he's got it down. I mean, that's definitely a franchise, dude. For sure.
Yeah.
How could you not make at least four films called Vampricon?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I mean, shit, dude.
It's so good. Oh, man.
But so that's his idea. A vampire bites a leprechaun. and he
played
wants
by Warwick Davis.
But does to you, coming from the guy who wrote 6 Leprechaun films, does that sound like he really just wants to make more Leprechaun films but can't legally do it?
It actually kind of does.
It's just funny as shit.
Yeah, I thought that was like the greatest piece of news like in a while.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I really should have watched the video just so I could have saw like all the details. I just read the text just to see if he was like more joking about it or if he was actually serious about it. But I hope he's serious. I hope he's writing this shit right now. And within the next year, we see Vampricon with Warwick Davis.
Instead of Hornswoggle. Yes, thank you.
Oh, man, it's so good.
That's it for the news.
Oh, that's it?
All right, so that was some pretty interesting news this week, JP. I would have to save myself. But so now we're going to hop into the question of the week, which is...
which is pretty much mood swings.
Which is pretty much mood swings as well. So this week's question is the top five, our top five, and your guys' top five favorite supernatural slash... ghost films.
Okay, I was about to say, if I knew we was doing supernatural, my list would have been totally different. I was under the impression he's doing ghost only.
I did just ask the question of ghost, but I mean, I guess it doesn't really. It's kind
it
of
kind of does
thing.
Because supernatural could include like Freddy Krueger and shit.
Yeah, but that's really pushing it. Yeah. No, we're talking ghost, like anything on that type of level, you know?
Yeah.
So. Like, would Victor Crowley count?
No.
He's pretty much a ghost.
quit overthinking it.
Seriously.
I know. That's okay. That's why my list didn't reflect those ideas. But it's also why my list... this was the hardest list for me, man. I don't know how to do this.
Like, I knew going into this, this was going to be tough for you because I you've mentioned so many times that ghost films are kind of like your least favorite subgenre of horror, right?
And it's not only that, but the... I can't tell what a ghost film really is. Like, I don't really know. Like, it, like there's demon possession, and then there's kind of like haunted house, and then there's kind of like straight up ghosts, like, you know, the entity, for example. And then there's like just other ones that kind of like the Blair Witch Project, for example. Like, I didn't even think of that as a ghost film, but people have it on their list. And I was like,
I don't consider it a ghost film though. It's weird.
Yeah, see, I didn't either, and that's why I was having so much trouble with this list because I'm like, what really counts? And I don't like ghost movies to begin with. And fuck your list. That's what I'm trying to say. This was a terrible choice.
Okay, so you're going to like I said, the question is going to start to pertain to the the review of the review of the week, right? So this was kind of an obvious question, but are you going to read off the viewers list?
Yes. So Andrew Cripps, he has number 5 Grave Encounters, number 4 Frighteners, number 3 Sixth Sense, number 2 Poltergeist, and number 1 The Shining, which you will see The Shining pop up many times. Then we have movie buff Mike. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's probably prevalent that that's going to happen. Yeah.
Number 5, The Changeling from Movie Buff Mike, which I actually just picked up, haven't got a chance to watch it yet, so who knows if it would have been on my list. Number 4 is Ju-On, a.k.a. the original Grudge. 3 is Poltergeist, 2, The Fog, 1, The Shining. Then we have Spooky Rotten Fun, shout out. We have 5, House on Haunted Hill. Now, he didn't specify whether he meant the remake or the original. I'm thinking he's saying the OG on this one. Seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, that would make a lot more sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 4, The Others. Number 3, The Changeling. Number 2, Blair Witch, which that's the one I was like, it's much more of a witch film to me. But I will say if this was considered a ghost film, this would probably make my top 5, if not be my number 1 film. I'm actually a huge fan of the Blair Witch Project. It's a great movie. Then his number 1 is The Shining. Then we have Martin VP. House on Haunted Hill is number 5. Once again, I don't think he specified whether it was the original or not, but it probably was the OG. Number 4, The Others. Number 3, Poltergeist. Number 2, Ringu. And number 1, The Shining. Then we have Never Ending Gory, which I really like that name.
I know. I thought the same thing when I saw that.
So number five is The Fog. Number four is Ring / Ooh. So Ringu and The Ring. He likes them both about the same. Then he put. He actually put number three is American Horror Story Season 1. I thought that was funny. Number two, Rebecca, which is a film I never heard of, and number one, The Shining. Then we have Deceps. Number five, The Nesting. Number four, Dark Tower. Number three, Ghost House. Number two, The Entity. And number one, The Changeling. Then we have our homie Zach, Movie Collector 666. Number six, The Entity. Number five, 2000 Maniacs. Number four, House, the Asian version. Number three, Enter the Void. Number two, Carnival of Souls. I'm pretty sure he means the OG on that one also. And then number one, The Shining. Then we have Emperor Corndog with five, Poltergeist. Number four, Amityville. Number three, Ring. Number two, The Conjuring, which I found pretty interesting since that film's, you know, still relatively new.
Oh, you're going to hate my list.
Oh. And number one, The Fog.
Oh, my list is... My number one is going to fucking blow your guys' brains
John
out.
Martin... Five, Star of Echoes, four, Entity, three, Witchboard, two, Wraith, and one, Poltergeist. So is Witchboard a ghost film also?
Yeah, I guess it's more of a more of a demon film, really, but I guess it kind of fits in there, I guess.
And then this guy, Wes Craven, I thought he was like fucking around with this list. Shudder, the original, A Haunting in Connecticut at number four, Mama at number three, The Grudge at number two, and Paranormal Activity 3 at number one.
That actually has to be the oddest list I've ever heard.
Shit. Yeah, that is kind of an odd list. But you know what,
but
man?
Each their own, right?
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just wait till you hear my number one is, so...
Honestly, dude, I'll wait till I do mine. And then, of course, we have David with... Number five, Ju-on. Number four, Ju-on. Number three, Ju-on. Number two, Ju-on. Number one, Ju-on. So yeah.
David isn't a list guy, but that shit made me laugh when I read that.
Yeah, I've actually never seen Ju-on, which I probably should because it popped up a few times. The Shining is kind of a regular at number one. I believe six or seven people had it as their number one. So.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to do the contest results right now since we're here. This was, you know, anybody who's answered a question that we've asked in the past, you're up for a new copy of The House of the Devil. And I'm just going to do it as a randomizer right now. I got everybody's name in there. And the winner is Martin VP. So I'll hit you up. And I'll send this out to you, buddy.
Me too.
Congratulations. David was actually second.
Ah, David, with your awesome list.
Yeah, he actually told us not to put him in the contest. That would have been awesome if he had won it.
So, yeah, what's your guys' list? I'm curious. Let's have Moods go first this time.
Oh, really? Wow.
We'll save Jeremy's.
Yeah. Okay. In at number five is The Haunting from 1963.
Which I just picked up, but I have not seen yet, so who knows if it would have made it.
Yeah, it's fucking... I love that movie. Number four, Carnival of Souls from 1962. Brilliant, brilliant film. Number three is The Changeling from 1980. Absolutely fucking phenomenal film. it's so good. Number two is John Carpenter's The Fog. Also from 1980. And at number one, of course, is one of my favorite movies of all time. In my top 10, The Shining, also from 1980. That was a good ghost year. And I do want to give one kind of...
honorable mention.
Honorable mention to The Entity. I was having a hard time. I was like, I wanted to put it in here, but I already had my top five. And so The Entity is going to be an honorable mention. It's a fucking phenomenal film. If you've never seen it out there, check it out.
So I only seen one out of five of those films. So maybe my list would be completely different if I had seen any of those.
Yeah, well, that top six list is... I mean, those are just my personal favorites, but I think they're actually some of the best ghost films ever made.
Yeah, it makes sense, because those are ones that come up a lot, and when I hear people talk about ghost films, especially stuff like The Changeling.
Yeah, The Changeling is actually really fucking creepy. Genuinely creepy. It's really well done. So I'm assuming, no, you've seen The Shining and The Fog, right?
No, I haven't seen the original Fog. I do own it, Scream Factory Edition. I just haven't got to it yet.
Wow, I can't believe you've never seen the original Fog, dude.
I know. That's one of the films that, like, when people ask, like, you know, what film have you still not seen yet, but it's super popular? And that's like one of them that I always think of.
Do you have copies of Carnival of Souls? And you mentioned you have The Haunting, but
yeah, I actually own all of those films you mentioned now.
Okay.
Which, yeah. It's funny, I just picked up like three of them in like the past month.
Nice. Well, you should definitely check those out and, you know, maybe just give your opinions on them sometime.
Yeah, maybe they'll pop up in what we watched. Jeremy, do you want me to do mine next?
Sure. Save me for last for once.
Yeah. So, damn, dude, my list almost feels embarrassing. I almost put Paranormal Activity on this list.
Oh, God, no.
I actually really like Paranormal Activity. I'm just going to start saying it from now on. No, like, I just
lost a teeny bit of respect for you, JP.
Easily defend it. Well, like, I'll be like, you know what, it's, you know, it's not that bad, but I actually just really like it, so I'm not gonna even lie anymore. I'm not gonna try to act like I don't. I love Paranormal Activity, the first one. It's a good one. So number five is The Ring, which I'm not even a huge fan of. Like, I mean, I like it a lot, but I like it a lot. I guess I am. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan, but I'm a fan. Then we have Poltergeist at number four. We've talked about Poltergeist. Number three, I have House. I wasn't sure if this was ghost or not. Once again, is House considered ghost?
I guess American House. Yeah, I would say that it's. You know, it's a ghost horror comedy, I guess. Yeah, I guess it falls in there.
I love House. It's like, House is like in my top 20 favorite horror films. So
yeah, it's a fun movie.
Then number two, I actually have, spoiler alert on my opinions on The Entity, but that's at number two. And then my number one is The Shining.
Yep.
Got it. I mean, I think you have to put The Shining as number one. It is like the perfect haunted place movie. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's my personal favorite one, but yeah, I mean, if you were to break down the best ghost films of all time, I think that definitely got to be in there, you know.
It shows, as a front runner too, if you look at everybody's lists, like almost everybody had The Shining as their number one.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It's a really good movie. Jeremy, your list.
Sure, you want to hear my list?
Well, it can't be any worse than JP's.
You guys are going to shit on me like you did with Maniac. Oh, man. That's going to be funny. All right. Number five, The OG, House on Haunted Hill. Number four, The Entity. Number three, Poltergeist. Number two, The Shining. And number one, Grave Encounters.
Holy fuck, are you serious?
Yeah.
Why would we shit on you? What's so weird?
That I have Grave Encounters as number one.
I've never even seen that, so I can't really comment. Is it better than Paranormal Activity?
By a lot. That movie actually scared the shit out of me, to be honest. I can't say that about too many movies.
Dude, that's Paranormal Activity, like, gave my heart a few good thumps, man.
I don't know. Don't watch the second one. The second one's ass. But the first one is, it's pretty damn good, in my opinion, but...
Yeah, I've been really wanting to check those out, though. I gotta see that movie, man. Shit, yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, that was interesting. At least you had The Shining in there.
Well, of course. And I'm not going to not include The Shining.
I had actually compiled a top 10 list of my ghost films, and of course, House on Haunted Hill was in there, too. So, I love that movie. The original House on Haunted Hill. I love the effects in that film.
It's so weird when you say you haven't seen like something like House on Haunted Hill since it's like public domain and it's like so easy to see.
Yeah.
And I've still not seen it. It's weird.
That is a good point. So yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay. Moods. Your mood swings.
All right.
Mood swings. Yeah, I guess I could ask next week's question. Yeah, so this week was obviously the top five Ghost films. So for next week, which is going to be episode 11?
11.
Episode 11's question is going to be, and of course it's going to pertain to, the review of the week. What is your personal top five slasher films from the year 1981? And of course, with this said, you know, we did agree we are going to tell you what the review is because we thought this out. And it, I guess, was just a good
Thanks
idea.
Thanks to Emperor Corndog.
Yeah, Emperor Corndog brought up a good point because he asked me if we could tell the audience what our film of the week is going to be so they can actually go out and watch the film. So when they, you know, listen to our opinions, they can, you know, write their opinions in the comment section and stuff. And I was like, that's a really good idea. So for next week, we are going to be reviewing My Bloody Valentine.
The original and the remake.
And yeah, we're going to not do a comparison show, but we're going to do both films. And,
I mean, probably will compare a bit.
I guess so. So My Bloody Valentine, of course, from 1981, hence the question, your top five slashers from 1981. And yes, we will do the remake also. So,
because if we did a top 10 slashers from 2000, whatever My Bloody Valentine remake came out in, it probably wouldn't work.
But I mean, 1981 was the high, was the pinnacle of slasher films. So, and there's a lot. I'm really interested to see people's lists because there's a lot of good ones. So, yeah. So, top five slashers from 1981. People, answer the question. And yes. So, getting into mood swings here. I don't really have a lot this week. It's just kind of, everything's kind of all over the place. But the first thing I do want to talk about was the fucking, okay, Movie Collector 666, Zach, posted in our, which I will leave the link in the description box to our Facebook 22 Shots of Moods and Horror page.
Yeah, it's a group page. Actually, just you can request to be a member and I'll automatically approve anybody who requests. You guys can do that too, I believe. Moods and Jeremy.
Yep.
The reason it's you know, one of those closed groups is just because, I don't know, it is.
it works better for us. But anyways, Zach had posted in the group page Criterion's announcements.
Yeah, I saw that.
July, August. And it turned out that it was a hoax, but man, the fucking list.
Yeah.
I wasn't even halfway through the list and I had the hugest boner. I could not believe the titles that were in this list. And by the time I got to the end of it, I think
they're up. All owned by Criterion, all those movies. So it's
like, they really? Possibly,
yeah.
I don't think Halloween.
No, there was a Halloween Laserdisc release. I have it.
Wow.
By Criterion.
But those rights expired a long time ago.
There was a Halloween put out by Criterion, so.
But yeah, so by the time I got to the end of the list, I was like, okay, there's got to be something fishy about this. I'm like, there's no way they're putting out a Halloween Blu-ray. I mean, how many Halloween Blu-rays do we actually fucking need? But but the thing that did catch my attention is that they had Crash in that
Crash.
List. And I was like, well, they did put out a Laserdisc back in the 90s. So I was like, well, you know. But man, that list was something else. You guys remember what was on it? They had like Halloween.
Scanners.
Pulp Fiction, I believe.
Pulp Fiction.
Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. There was David Lynch's Crash. Blue Velvet. Yeah, there's all these amazing films, man.
I looked at it and I was like, it looked like a good, like, I don't really know a lot about Criterion, but I thought it was a good fake. So, like, I didn't know it was fake at first, and I actually was kind of confused at first.
Yeah, I knew it was fake.
I didn't know somebody would fake that. Like, I guess you can't put it past
I don't think the Criterion has the rights to the thing, so I kind of knew it was fake.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the titles in there. I was like, I don't know if this is real, but I really wanted it to be, though.
Yeah, me too.
It's like just too good to be true, but I had a lot of fun with that. But I just couldn't get over the fact there was even arts, you know, to the releases and stuff. I thought that was a really nice touch.
That's why
I thought they were
really good fakes, because they even looked like Criterion-y.
Glorious Bastards, it's like, that one was another red flag for me, because I know Pulp Fiction had a Laserdisc release put out by Criterion back in the day that I have too, but Inglourious Bastards, it's like,
I
actually really liked the art to Halloween. I just thought it was so different.
Yeah,
it was kind of cool, actually.
So who the fuck drew those? Like, who did those arts? Like,
I don't know.
This motherfucker had so much time on his hands.
That's why I wanted to talk about this, because I was like, that is like one of the best hoax websites or whatever I've seen in a long time. Like, that shit.
But the thing is, the thing is, like, what is the payoff? Like, it really wasn't a big payoff. Like,
I don't know, man. Maybe this is
the people who like get excited about DVD.
But maybe this is the payoff right now, because we're fucking talking about it still. I don't know.
That would be pretty cool.
But that brings me to my other point. Like, JP, you mentioned in the comment section of that post that you weren't a fan of Criterion. Is that because, I mean, you said basically it's because you think they're overpriced and stuff. But
I just don't get it. I guess it could be ignorance, but I just,
well, I mean, that's
they
the
never
choice.
Seem like that amazing. Like, they just seem overpriced and kind of almost not worth it. I don't know. It just seems like it almost seems like it's one of those things where it's like, it's cool to have like a Criterion, or like
they're cheaper than Scream Factories if you buy them during the Barnes and Noble sale.
That's something that I didn't know about. So
yeah.
I saw them as like these $30 releases, and I'm like, fuck, I'm not paying $30 for a Blu-ray.
Well, they're mostly like $40, but yeah, you get them half price, you get them for $20. But to be honest, man, Criterion's do a spectacular job with all the releases.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They put in like massive booklets like in every one of the releases. It's crazy.
The booklet in fucking 120 Days of Salo is fucking like 70 pages or something. It's crazy.
Like,
is it just a booklet, or is it like worth reading?
It's worth reading.
They're worth reading for sure, but it's even the fact of like their special features. Like, they really go all out on pretty much every release, and their transfers are always fantastic.
Oh yeah,
like they do such a good job with their transfers too. I mean, I'm not, you know, Scream Factory does too, but you know, as of late, some of the releases by Scream Factory, I have been hearing that, you know, people have been kind of complaining about the lack of features and stuff. Like the newly released Cat People Blu-ray that just came out, there's more features on my DVD than there is on that Blu-ray.
Is that a collector's edition?
Yeah.
It is a collector's edition. There's actually not that many. But I will say, though, you know, for me, it's about, you know, the film itself and the PQ and the sound quality and stuff.
And the artwork. I really am a big fan of their artwork.
Oh, totally.
I heard the PQ sucks.
Those things I really like about Scream Factory.
The PQ sucks on Cat People?
Yeah.
I have no idea what people are watching. That movie looks beautiful, man.
Yeah?
I watched it fucking two nights ago.
It's kind of funny that I heard that and you're like, oh, no.
No, it looks really, and then that's what got me, because I just heard the same thing, and I was like, what? Like, it looks really fucking good. I mean, I had no problems with the transfer at all, and it sounded.
Maybe it's one of those cases where people were initially bitching about special features, and one guy was like, yeah, and the PQ sucks, and
well,
then everyone's like, yeah, god damn it, it does suck.
It probably totally got lumped into that, but to be quite frank, like, I have the Cat People DVD, so I have the features, so I'm not overly pissed off, but you know, the transfer in itself was worth the pickup, and of course I thought the art was really good on it too, so I had no problems with it. But getting back to Criterion, though, honestly, they just do such a good job with all the releases. Like, I shouldn't say I was never a fan of Criterion. I was really a fan. I just, they were a little pricey for me, even, you know, in the half price sale, everything's still $20, but I learned that it's actually worth it, though.
Yeah, it's worth it.
I picked up a few for $20, and I'm like, you know what? 20 is my limit here. I'll wait for the sales, which is fine. They happen two times a year. Not a big deal.
Yep.
Pick them up. Who fucking cares, right?
I have like four in my collection, I think.
See, okay. I mean, like I said, it could be just ignorance, which it probably is. I don't actually own a single Criterion, so I can't really comment on them. But from afar, they just never really looked worth it to me. So I will, you know, grab something. I was kind of looking at that film Antichrist, I believe, and that was one.
It's
that
beautiful.
I had for a little
the
while.
Cinematography and the opening
so,
sequence in that movie is so fucking good.
Yeah,
maybe I'll give Criterion a try pretty soon, and you know, come back with my opinions.
Yeah,
for sure.
What else here? What else do I want to talk about?
Fucking subtitles.
you know it's so fucking funny, dude. I have that written down right in front of me. No subtitles on releases. JP hates it. That's literally what I have.
Fucking do. Hey, it actually bugs me. Like, I expect that shit from like Echo Bridge, you know. Like, I'll pop in like Prom Night or something, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm not really expecting subtitles on here. But if you're putting out a release that like has special features, can you fucking at least put some subtitles on there for our deaf people? You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Like, I can't watch a movie with, like, I can, but I've gotten so used to watching movies with subtitles, and I'm not talking about foreign films. I'm talking about English-speaking films. I need subtitles. I want them. I don't need them. I want them. I want subtitles so I can read along with what I'm watching so I don't miss anything. And it really bugs me when they don't have subtitles. It really does.
What do you think the percentage of movie lovers out there, movie watchers, is that watch films with the subtitles on when they're in English?
Gotta be like 75. No, 0.2%.
It's 0.2%
is JP and old farts who don't even watch the movies we watch. So it's probably just...
What about, like, the deaf people in the world? You know, those people?
No, I'm excluding them, because that's obvious.
Yeah, so were they by not putting subtitles on their films.
I'm talking about abled hearing people like yourself that watch films every day with subtitles. That was an English release. Like, it's actually kind of quirky, dude. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I just find it very interesting.
I don't know. By calling it quirky, it kind of sounds like you're saying there's something wrong with it.
No. Quirky is good. I respect quirky because that's fun. Because it got us talking about this. It's hilarious to me. I think it's absolutely funny.
Not hilarious when I'm trying to watch The Entity and I'm trying to hear what the fuck these people are saying over this loud, like,
I am
fucking
cracking.
Soundtrack, and it's like bugging me because come on, damn it, put subtitles on it. It looks like a DVD that should have subtitles.
So what is the percentage of films that you come across without subtitles?
It depends. Like, every Echo Bridge release doesn't have subtitles.
Well, what do you expect from Echo Bridge?
Seriously.
Yeah, well,
I'm surprised you get a fucking keep case with your disc from Echo.
You know what surprises me sometimes is when I'll throw on some subtitles and I'll see that there's like 6 or 7 options, and I'm like, they got like Portuguese, they got like, you know, Spanish. Obviously, they have like French, but they'll have like some weird like languages that are not that common, and I'll be like, wow, man. And some people can't even put one fucking English subtitle on there, and
well,
these people got like 17 languages.
JP, can I give you a little word of advice?
What?
You have a DVD drive in your computer?
Yeah.
Put in your computer, go online, search subtitles for Entity, and download a subtitle file and just insert it into the fucking...
Yeah, because when I throw on a film at night, that's what I feel like doing.
I'm just giving you a fucking suggestion, ass muncher, okay?
I mean, it's not that... Like, it's... Like, if it... It's definitely, like, not that big of a deal, but... you know, I like fucking subtitles on my films, dude. Like, that, you'd be surprised at, like, some of the films that don't have it. I can't think of any off, like, the top of my head, but there's, like, popular films that... just don't have subtitles for whatever reason.
Quadrophenia on Criterion? Fucking assholes.
It is interesting, but...
I've watched... You know, me and you have talked about this, and where it stems from is when I used to live with my cousin, who's more like a brother, we stayed in the same room, and he went to sleep very early. And I would stay up very late. So I would have to keep the volume down out of respect, even though it was my room. You know, to a lower extent.
Way
so
to go,
that,
JP.
Therefore,
very respectful.
I would watch the films with subtitles, so I didn't have to hear every exact word because I could read it along with, you know, the low volume. And I kind of just got used to it, and I realized it's a better way of watching things because you don't miss any dialogue. And
dude,
it's a very
beautiful thing that you're doing there. I really respect it.
Thank you.
You know, it's a beautiful story, man. You know, look how respectful you are. That's awesome. But yeah. I totally understand where you're coming from. I mean, yeah, if you got to keep the volume down, you got to watch the film somehow, right? It totally makes sense.
Yeah, and motherfuckers, just please put subtitles on your DVDs. If you're going to put features, you better have subtitles too.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, subtitles. I just want to quickly give a shout out to Spooky Rotten Fun, also known as Austin. Yeah. Just want to welcome him to our Body Bags family. He's going to be the new filling guy on the channel. He actually already got his first gig this past week. He filled in for Laura. So big props to Spooky Rotten Fun. I'll leave the link down below. Go sub his channel. He's an awesome up-and-comer. He's got great taste in films. Loves his Italian cinema like I do. So that caught my eye right away. But Big shout out to Spooky Rotten Fun.
Yeah, that was all me. All me. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I sent you one of his videos, and I was like, hey, check this kid out. So thank me.
Oh, thank you, JP. Me. I love you very much. Thank you.
No, but
also,
on the realness, this is a pretty cool dude, yes, and, you know, glad, for real glad to have him, all, especially considering we've needed a fill-in guy since Jeremy retired from that position.
I think he'll do a good job. So, I also want to give another shout out to a guy that's been, you know, following us on, I'm sure he's been on your guys' channels too. I know he's been commenting a lot of my videos. He's a new up and comer also. I know JP, I think you know who he is. His name is Witch Z.
Yeah. So I was actually going to give that dude a shout out.
So I'm going to give him a shout out right now, 'cause he's been commenting and, you know, he's been really down with everything we've been doing. So
big shout out to him. Been commenting on my videos too.
Yeah, he's been posting some videos up and stuff. So go check out his channel. Link will be down below.
I gotta check.
And also, you know, this week was an interesting week on YouTube because, you know, every once in a while, we always kind of, you know, as a YouTuber, as, you know, someone that watches a lot of videos and stuff, you guys probably, this probably comes across your mind too. But, you know, you think about older guys that used to watch.
Comments on my videos too. So,
you know, so, and you're like, it always pops in mind, like, where the fuck are they? Why aren't they making videos? You know, so this week I'm thinking about Scotty and I'm like, I wonder if Scotty's ever going to come back to YouTube. He fucking next day posts up a fucking video on YouTube. So Willie Mark One was one guy that I was like, Scotty, he needs to come back, make a video. He comes back the next day. It was like I fucking knew it. Same with OD666666, also known as Jason. Same thing. He just comes out of left field this week and posts up another video. And I was like, that's fucking amazing. But I just want to mention a couple other guys I really want videos from again. Spalding069, also known as Vance. Love his videos. He's a funny fucking guy.
He really is funny as shit.
He cracks me up in every single video. Like, I always tell Vance, like, I never laugh so hard in videos, except for when I'm watching his shit, man. He's just so fucking genuinely funny. But yeah, Vance.
So, you know what to do? Everybody listening to this, if you know these guys, go comment on their videos and their channel and be like, hey, come back.
Yeah, exactly. Vance, very, very knowledgeable, very cool guy. But yeah, come back, make some videos. Also, Joe, a.k.a. The Horror Man, used to be one of my favorite YouTubers. He was so interesting. Yeah. Like, his collection is fucking phenomenal, yeah, man.
He has some great out-of-print shit, man. It's crazy.
He's like king. An out-of-print, like, wizard. Yeah. He knows shit that is, like, dude. Crazy.
I used that to guy... mention videos all the time. I'm like, you know, I'm not sure if this is out-of-print or whatever. I'm like, I'm probably going to have to ask Joe, and then Joe would comment on my video being like, no, it's not out of print, man. I'm like, fuck. He's so good at that.
I first started YouTube in April of 2012, and he was one of the first people along with Moods to actually sub to my channel, which was really cool.
Yeah, man. I really miss the Whore Man. Yeah. I wish he'd come back. I try to bug him on Facebook every once in a while. I'm like, Joe, are you going to come back and make a video? But I don't know. I think he's just a busy man. So, but anyways, go over to his channel, bug the shit out of him, get him back making videos. And that is the Whore Man. And also, my buddy Gary, also known as Colfie from the UK, another guy that I've watched for years, been friends with. He's actually sent me some movies in the past and stuff. And I know that he has an issue with the Google Plus thing. So he's kind of, I think he's on like the boycotting side of things. But I wish he would come back and make videos though, because I know that he just made a video entry for Jason Whitney's contest. So I'll give a big shout out to Jason Whitney too. He's a big supporter of, I know, at least my channel and stuff. But he's got a contest happening right now, which just reminded me because Colfie made a video and posted on Facebook because he's, of course, you know, accepting video entries on Facebook now. Jason Whitney is, because of the no video responses on YouTube, which I still have a major problem with. It really disappoints me that we can't do the video responses anymore. But, you know, people are making their way around it and getting to, you know, get people to post them on Facebook, which is, I think, is a good idea, though.
Yeah,
what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, it's all right. If it works, you know.
You know, totally, right? Because Colfie doesn't want to post the videos on fucking YouTube, so make the video, upload it to Facebook, and there's his
entry. I've seen a lot of people doing that.
You know, at least they're still supporting. You know, they're watching the videos, they're just not commenting because they can't, because they didn't switch over to Google, but, you know, making the effort, I really enjoy that. So I'll leave Jason's link down below, too. He has a contest going on.
Are you leaving all these links down below?
I'll leave all these links, yes.
You're going to be a busy man.
Yeah, I know. but yeah, so he's got a contest going on right now. I believe it is your just, you have to talk about an Italian film for 5 minutes or whatever. It's a 100 sub contest. So check out that. And I think that's everything I have this week. Actually, I had a couple other things, but I think I might save them for next week. So
really quickly, since we're giving shout outs, I just like to give a shout out to Todd Graves from ninth grade. Thank you for hooking up with Stacy. Just, you know, my thank you. I really mean thanks.
That was actually really cool. I do have one more thing. I forgot about this. So I wanted to start like a new kind of portion thing. I know JP had mentioned this in a podcast before, but you know, we would like if people would even ask questions and then we can answer them. And you know,
he only knows that I mentioned it before because I made a big deal out of the fact that I mentioned it.
JP was crying like a little bitch, a little fucking baby before the show going, "Man, that was my idea. You stole my shit." And I'm like, "I didn't steal shit, dude. I thought I came up with that myself, but whatever." But he probably did come up with it because, you know, I'm not very original. But anyways.
I'm a mastermind genius.
But anyways, the point is, guys, if you have any questions that you just, you know, that we can quickly answer, just leave them down in the comment section and we will get to those 100%. You know, we will answer them right on the live podcast. So, and that officially does it for this week's Mood Swings. I did not bitch about anything.
That's
right. Wow. That's crazy.
I did all the bitching.
Yeah, that was a good segment, though, I thought.
Yeah.
Lots of, not bad. Lots of good shout-outs and definitely go support.
Yeah, especially to Todd Graves. I wonder whatever happened to him because he was in ninth grade and he was gone after that. I never seen him again. I wonder if he's on Facebook, maybe Twitter.
That's funny as fuck, man. It's so funny. All right, so that is the segment of Mood Swings. Like we said, very interesting segment, Mood. So now we're going to hop into our normal segment of the week. And that, of course, is the What We Watch segment, when we talk about all the films that we watched in the week and our opinion on them. So let's continue the fashion. And Moods, you're up first.
I am up first. Okay. I watched this week. Well, I watched a lot of films this week, but I'm going to talk about this one. And it is from 2013, and it's titled Frankenstein's Army.
Oh, nice. Dark Sky Films?
Yes. I heard a lot of things about this movie. It was quite talked about from a lot of people. I saw it in a lot of people's even top 10 lists of the year. I saw it on people's films that they didn't like lists and shit like that. So it was quite opinionated. This film had a lot of opinions on it. So basically the story in this film is, it takes place in World War II, and it follows a group of Soviet Russian soldiers or whatever, and they're lost in German territory and shit, and basically they're on a mission to find, I think, a couple like POWs and stuff. I think that's kind of what it is. But anyways, the point is that they kind of get sucked into going into this German type fucking warehouse kind of deal thing, and then all hell breaks loose because what they find in there is like some crazy ass machines, and the Germans are doing some crazy ass, they're building crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Dr. Frankenstein's kind of reanimating bodies and making them into like robotic killers and all types of different shit, man. It's pretty wild. So that's basically what it is. And these guys start getting killed off, right? Because they're obviously foreign to Germans, right? So, and it's World War II. My thoughts on this movie, I love the premise. I thought the monsters looked fucking phenomenal in this film. It was really kind of well done. I do have a couple problems with the movie, though, and it's one that has been mentioned by so many people.
Wait, how's Jeffrey Combs' performance?
Jeffrey Combs?
Isn't he in this movie?
Nope. Nope.
I'm fucking stupid, then. Look at me, making myself look like an asshole. Thank you. Thank you.
But on the regular, I doubt it really make a difference this time.
So my biggest problem with this film is actually the fact that it's shot in color, because this movie is basically a found footage film. You know, there's shots in the film where you actually see the camera that they're using and shit. It's quite obviously shot digitally, or like on like a high def kind of digital camera. So I've got problems with that whole thing because the film looks too clear for one thing. And you can tell it's a high def camera. It's 1945. There obviously was no such thing. But it should have been shot in black and white. Would have added to it because 1945, obviously, there was no colors. But that was kind of a downer to it. But the problem
is this
that I had,
is this your own? Is that your original thought, or have you heard other people say that too?
No, I heard people mention that that they wanted to or that they thought that it being shot in color was a problem. But honestly, you notice it right away. And this is my own thought right here, is that while this movie starts out, it's like the weirdest fucking thing. It's almost like the filmmakers are throwing it in your face that it's in color, because there's certain colors in the film that are so accentuated, and they're like, they really pop out. Like there's greens and yellows and stuff that are, they're not natural, you know, to the film. Right. So they actually went in there and did something about these colors and made them even stand out even more. And I thought that was so interesting. Me and my buddy were watching this movie together going, what the fuck is with the colors popping out? Like this movie should be in black and white in the first place. And now all of a sudden these colors are like, it's like fucking right in your face. Huh. I thought it was so random, dude. Like if this movie would have worked so much better if it was in black and white and just, and obviously done with a grainy camera, you know, like I said, you know, there's shots in the film where you can literally see this guy filming and he's in a mirror and you can see the camera that he's using, but it's quite obviously not that camera, right? Cause it's shot too clear. Like in 1945, this should have been done very grainy on film, you know? And so those are some nitpicks I have with
That's odd to me.
Like, it is very odd.
It's so obvious.
It's so obvious. And there is a couple mistakes in this film that I even noticed too. There's a scene in the film where towards the end, the dude holding the camera actually gets knocked over by this machine or whatever. And he falls to the ground and he drops his camera and the lens clearly breaks. Like it breaks, right? There's only one camera being used in this film. The next scene.
It's fixed.
It's totally fixed. The rest of the movie is not shot with a crack in the lens, because if you break your lens and you're still filming, you're going to have that crack as the film. Yeah. Me and my buddy Dylan looked at each other and went, are you serious? The camera fixed itself that fucking quick? Like, there is problems with this movie. But, you know, if you can look past the whole being shot in color thing and
technical goofs on the idea that you're making this film.
Like I said, 1945, and it just looks too clear. But, you know, if you can get past all that, it actually is really fun. Like, I got to say, the monsters are fantastic looking and so different and unique. Every single monster in this film is different. They looked awesome. I thought some of the gore was pretty good. It was pretty well acted. You know, I would recommend this movie. I would probably give it, you know, maybe just a 7, 7.5 out of 10 kind of thing.
Frankenstein Theory?
Frankenstein's Army.
Dark Sky Films.
I would have given this film a lot higher if it was shot in black and white and those obvious fuck-ups weren't there. But overall, it's fun. It's definitely worth it to see the monsters and what happens to some of these people. There's some pretty nasty carnage in it. So,
you know what, dude? I bet I know what it is, okay? The way you're describing it, it sounds like it would be too obvious for black and white to have not came up in the discussion. Do you think it's somebody with money who is intervening and like saying like, dude, we can't put out a black and white movie in 2013. Shit doesn't work like that. Or do you think it was just the filmmakers who decided not to do it?
I would probably say it was the filmmakers. Cause I just don't understand. Like, if you want to make this thing, I mean, it's a found footage film, for fuck's sakes, right? You know, I mean, it's 1945. You put two and two together, your grain is going to be obviously there. And it should be in black and white. I mean, those are two things that you just can't overlook.
Yeah.
Don't understand. I don't understand
the decision. An odd choice,
My biggest problem with it, I was accepting the fact that it was in color. I'm like, whatever. Fine, and the fact that they're speaking English in these films. That was another thing we thought was pretty funny. This movie is all in English.
I've been watching a lot of those.
Death
Camp movies, and all of those are in English. It's funny. It's weird.
But, you know, it's something I can get past, whatever. I mean, it's Russian and Germans, but they're talking English. I don't know. Whatever. But like I said, the biggest problem I did have was the fact that some of the colors were actually thrown in your face. Like, they're very accentuated. And I'm like, why is it like that? You know, they obviously knew what they were doing. So I was very confused on what was happening there. Like, we must have looked at each other like 10 times during the film going, what the fuck is with the colors, man? You know, it's not just a normal film color. It's actually right in your fucking face. Very noticeable. So I don't know if there's some kind of hidden fucking message there or what's going on, but we couldn't figure it out for the life of us, man. If anybody out there has any theories on what the fuck was going on with the color scheme in this film, which it never should have been in color in the first place, let me know.
I think what everybody should do is hit the director up on Twitter and ask him if black and white was ever a, you know, thought that was thrown around, because I guarantee he'd probably answer you. That's what Twitter's good for, by the way.
Twitter. Yeah, I would really actually like to find out. So maybe I'll make an account just to do that. But, you know, honestly, with those problems, like I said, it's a fun film. We definitely had a blast watching this. And, you know, by the end of the film, all we could think about was how cool the fucking monsters were. So
that's good.
Really? I mean, it has its problems, but it's worth the watch. I do recommend it. Check it out.
All right. JP, what's your movie?
I watched a film called Pelt from 2010.
Isn't that Master of Horrors? No,
you're thinking of you're thinking of Pelt from Masters of Horrors.
Well, quite obviously.
No, this was this is like a feature length film. It's a horror comedy, and honestly, dude, I had a lot of opinions about this film. I watched it early in the week, and for some reason, I forgot like everything about this movie. It's like a slasher world of like Wrong Turn ripoff-ish. It's like a backwoods slasher, but there's only one killer. He's not very original looking at all. He's actually quite average. And there's these people. There's this group of kids. What the fuck was they? Dude, I swear to God, I like totally blanked on this movie. They were out there doing something. They were trying to go somewhere.
Dude, holy crap, man.
I swear, man. I don't know. I was like watching a lot of films this week, I guess, and I totally just – I guess it's not a very memorable film. I'm actually going to quickly just try to figure out what the hell this thing was about, and then maybe it'll spark some memory. But I know it was like horror comedy-ish.
Well, that's good. At least we're on the right track.
The IMDb description doesn't sound very descriptive. Yeah, I guess they were camping or something, man. I don't know. And it like read the IMDb. I don't know, man. This movie was basically just okay. It was kind of not very funny. It was actually very Wrong Turn-y. Kind of thinking back on it, because now I'm starting to remember scenes. There was like a scene in like a watchtower, and I remember the characters doing stupid things and going back for people and stuff.
It's like a backwoods kind of slasher cannibal film or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. It says sudden gory death hides behind every bush when beautiful Jennifer and her friends embark on a backpacking excursion deep into the woods. They come chest to chest with an evil as old as, and then it's ... Huh. As old as the trees. And it, like, so that's the description on IMDb. I guess it kind of makes sense why I would kind of forget this one. But I remember liking it more than I'm remembering, I guess. I don't know, man. I honestly totally failed on this one, much like House of the Devil. So Pelt, at the time, I wrote down 6 out of 10, so maybe a little lower than that, thinking that I can't really remember much about it.
Yeah,
I watched it a week ago.
Crazy. All right. Moving along.
All right. So next movie I'm going to talk about is a movie that good old JP was talking about last week, and he said, hey, Jeremy, you should watch this movie and talk about it next week. So here I am talking about the movie Nine Dead, which was put out a few years ago by Image.
You mean you actually listened to me?
Yeah, I couldn't believe myself. I listened to Moods, too, finally.
Oh, you finally did? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I only tried to get him to watch Adam Chaplin for like a month.
Yeah.
And then JP's like, hey, I recommend this movie. And he goes and watches it 5 minutes later. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Just the piss moods off.
Yeah.
But,
so what'd you think?
Basically, movie is about,
I think we explained it last week.
But in case they weren't listening last week, JP. I'm going to give them a I am going to give them a refresher. Are you okay with that?
I am totally okay with that.
So, movie's basically about this these nine people from all around get kidnapped by this guy and locked up in this warehouse. And of course, they all wake up and they're handcuffed to this metal pipe. All nine of them are handcuffed to this owned metal pipe in this warehouse. And the main guy comes in and says they have 10 minutes to find out why they're here. And every 10 minutes, he's going to kill another person. So they all have to work together to find out why they're there. And every 10 minutes, people die. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's a they got to solve a mystery. They got to solve a mystery. And what I thought what was kind of cool was like a little shocking little like jolt of like
I thought the, oh, I thought shit. The ending sucked major cock, but it was all right. It was a lot better than I expected. That's for sure. I thought it was just going to be another, you know, typical shitty Saw ripoff, but it was done okay, you know. Well, it had some characters who were annoying as fuck and stuff like that, but
intentionally though they were written that way. I think the problem with the characters was they were cliche as fuck. Like you had this type of guy,
typical
like,
black man,
and you had this type of guy, you know, the typical tough black gangster guy and the, you know, cop guy and the fucking bitchy reporter type, you know. It was really cliche, but that one of the girl, who's the girl, that's like Jennifer Love Hewitt.
It's not Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Who the you really think Jennifer Love Hewitt's agent got this script in her office? It's like,
no,
hey,
it's
I'm
like
totally
somebody like
this.
That. Melissa Joan Hart. It's like the it's same not. Type of person. It's Melissa
it's
Joan
not
Hart.
Melissa Joan Hart, JV. No,
it is.
Not. Is that Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Yeah, Kelly, the girl, the main girl, dude. That's Melissa Joan Hart.
Whatever. Well, congratulations for being in a low budget, nobody heard you.
No, but that's what I didn't realize it was her either until I was looking at IMDb last week, and I was like, wow, that's crazy.
That is crazy to think about.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, I found that really weird. But I thought that, like, without spoiling much, like, do you mean the way they were all connected together was stupid?
No, I just thought what happened at the ending was stupid, what the bitch did, but I'm not going to spoil it, but...
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it. I thought it ended okay. I thought that some of the crimes that the people, like, reasons why they were there were, like, very different from each other. Like, some people really deserved to be there. Others were just kind of, you know, did one little thing. I didn't really care. I think the killer guy could have been more unique-ish. Mm-hmm. And it's very too much like Saw. I mean, it's really Saw.
Yeah, I thought the guy looked like the killer from the collection in the collector, but it was all right. It was okay. I would give it like I know you gave it a high rating, JP.
Yeah, because I really like this one actually. I know it has flaws and I know it's like low budgety, but it entertained me with a bunch of people in one room.
Yeah, I know you like those type of movies. I'd give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to watch it. No, to be honest, man, I've seen a few, you know, kind of Saw type ripoff films in the last few years and none of them impressed me. So, I don't know. I'm not... whatever. This one probably might be better than the ones I've seen, but who knows? I guess I'm up. Alrighty. So, the next film I watched, I think originally came out in 2011. We got a 2013 release of it, and that is Inbred.
Nice.
I believe in the UK they got a release a couple years ago on Blu-ray.
Blu-Dizzle.
And, yeah, so basically... the premise of Inbred is very simple. It's about four teenagers that are on a trip with their social workers.
I thought you was going to describe how to inbreed at first.
Okay. So basically they're on this trip with their social workers. Social workers are trying to obviously do their job, straighten the kids out and do whatever and stuff. And so they're on this trip and they have this run in with this, you know, these fucking backwood hillbilly kind of deal and shit like that. They find that, you know, these hillbillies are fucking, you know, basically this one scene that they've got these animals like on fire and shit. So they kind of freak out and stuff. And they have this, it's just random scene. They just come across like these animals that are like burning in this fire and shit. So they kind of have it out with this crew and stuff like that. And you know, they kind of think that that's maybe the end of it, but it's not, of course. The inbred family and shit like that, they basically take these guys hostage and stuff, lock them up, and they start to fuck with them. You know, they start to fuck with them real hard. It's very simple premise. It's, you know, one of these kind of backwoods kind of crazy shit, batshit fucking movies or whatever. But you know, honestly, it takes a while to get going. I won't lie. Like, this movie runs about 100 minutes. And I would say about 45 to 50 minutes into the film is really when they have their first encounter with these backwood, you know, inbred hillbillies or whatnot. You know, once it starts getting going, there's some pretty fucked up things happening. Like, basically, you know, there's people that put on shows. They tie up, you know, one of the captees, and they kind of make them like the header in the show. You know, and they torture them and stuff. Everyone comes out to it. It's like, it's just so redneck. They did a good job capturing, you know, the whole backwoods inbred redneck kind of thing. I thought those scenes were pretty fun.
I always wearing masks. A lot of movies don't capture that well.
Yeah, I thought actually the people, like, they looked really kind of just totally what you would expect if you ran into a crew of, like, you know, hillbillies and shit. Like, they kind of looked the part. And stuff. So yeah, there's some pretty crazy scenes, you know, with them, you know, getting tortured and getting all fucked up and stuff. So basically the film is them trying to get away now. And you know, it doesn't necessarily work out too well for some of the people, obviously. But like I said, it takes a little bit to get going in the film. But, you know, some of the kills and some of the shit are pretty well done. I did have a little problem with some of the CGI in the film. I think that CGI was actually on the better half of CGI. Like, it was, you know how some CGI just looks really, really fucking bad? It looked a little better. I wish they had it done at all practical. It would have definitely added to it a little bit. There's one fucking scene in the film where this hillbilly gets nailed by this fucking vehicle. It just looks absolutely fucking hilarious, man.
I like the scene in Halloween 2 where that dude gets nailed by the vehicle.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that, actually. But in this scene, he gets run over, and you just see him getting all gnarled up underneath the vehicle and shit. It's pretty fucking nasty. I will say, though, I had a lot of fun with the film. It's not overly that great, you know, but I loved the ending of the movie. The ending was fantastic. It had me fucking laughing pretty good, actually. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, I would definitely recommend it just so you could check out the ending. It's pretty well done. So, if I had to rate it, I'd probably give it loosely maybe a 7 out of 10. I wish the effects were all practical, but like I said, it's definitely better looking CGI to the film. And there's a lot of fucked up things happening in the film and shit. So
I have that one. Maybe
some poor decisions by some of the characters. But yeah, once you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Poor decisions. But, you know, honestly, it is what it is. It's a backwoods inbred film, and you know what you're gonna get. So it's good. I recommend it.
Yeah, that's like my backwoods inbred film pelt. You're probably not gonna remember it. I do, thinking back while you was talking, it was like kind of, I remember like the horror and comedy didn't mix well. Like, it was horror then comedy, and it was trying to be two different things, and it just didn't gel well. I remember that. So
Yeah, I got to say, there were some pretty funny parts in this. Like I said, some of the funniest scenes in the film are like in the last, like, probably 10 to 15 minutes. It's pretty funny what they're doing. But, yeah, definitely give it a shot. I'm sure you guys can find this one for Jeremy, you have this film, you said?
Yeah, I bought it from Blockbuster a little bit ago.
Yeah, it's like, fucking dirt cheap now. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So give it a watch. It's not bad.
Awesome. All right, JP.
All right, thanks. you know, kind of going off of what Jeremy had said, where he said he, you know, watched a film that he recommended, that I recommended him, I actually did the same. But he recommended this one a few weeks back. And it's 247 degrees Fahrenheit. This is from 2011. Group of characters trapped in a sauna. And, you know, at first, I remember seeing the trailer for this film back in 2011, and I thought it was marketed as, like, Tyler Mane was, like, a villain, and he, like, locked them in the sauna. And I was happy to see that that wasn't the case, because I really didn't want it to go that way. I thought that this film could have been way better, considering what they had on the table. They never really, like, showed me how uncomfortable it would be to be in there. I mean, they hinted it, but they don't do a good, they don't do good filmmaking in actually making me feel the terrible feeling that these people would feel. I think what they should have done is maybe followed a fighter trying to cut weight a bit and you know, kind of convey that through film, how they're feeling, because I watch a lot of mixed martial arts, and I've seen, like, a lot of, you know, weight cut stuff, and it really looks excruciating being in a sauna for that long. Also, I felt that the dialogue, which you need in these films where there's a small group of characters in one location for a long time, it was nowhere near the quality that you need. Nowhere near. It just was like, there was nothing interesting. These characters were boring. They had no interesting backstories or history or little anecdotes to tell. It was just this, them in a sauna. I actually liked the way that it all went down, like the reason why they was locked in the sauna and stuff. And I liked how that it really felt like they were trapped. You know how in these films you're like, all right, well, why don't you try this, or why don't you try that, or I would do this if I was there. I thought this film did a pretty good job of, like, you know, explaining away a lot of things and making it make sense. I thought the ending was kind of like
garbage.
I didn't like how everything went down, like, is like how they, what their ideas were to get out eventually. And overall, I think what really hurts this film, though, is just the characters. Scout Taylor Compton was not good at all. The acting was actually pretty poor, but I thought it was entertaining enough. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
I can't remember what I gave it, but I think it was pretty close to that.
Do you agree with me about most of, like, how like they just, there was no dialogue there was nothing. I always bring up Frozen, how they use, like, these little cool stories and backstories and anecdotes and stuff to keep the film moving as they're on the ski lift. There was none of that.
Nothing. Yeah, I could see where you're coming at for sure on that one.
Moods, have you seen this one?
No, I haven't seen this one. Actually, I think someone just mentioned this in a comment in one of my videos, saying that it was like one of the worst movies they ever saw.
It's not that.
I definitely wouldn't go that far. That would go to Beneath the Mississippi.
No, but I think, you know, that's a personal thing though, right? It's one of the worst films that they had ever seen, but who knows? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound that bad, to be
honest.
That's
interesting.
No, it's not. I just think that there was so much potential there with, like, with relaying how terribly bad that would feel to be in a sauna for that long with the heat, like, cranked up, and to be, like, sweating out all your water, and to be, you know, dehydrated and your kidneys shutting down. They didn't do any of that, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're practically going to have a stroke if you're in there too long. So it really sucks that they didn't deliver that message and fail.
I think the movie would work for me a little bit. I mean, just on the level of, I hate saunas. I hate being in them. Like, I mean, I own a hot tub in my house, and I only go in it and I just put my feet in it. I sit on top of it. I don't like in hot tubs and saunas and stuff. Like, my wife uses it all the time, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of being in inserted into, like, hot water or a sauna where I can't breathe. I don't know. It's just, I've always been like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the movie would kind of scare me a little bit.
You would think, but it doesn't. It does not play on the Sauna thing. That's the thing. It doesn't really go there.
Mm-hmm.
It should, though. That's too bad because I also am like that. I don't like saunas. I don't like hot tubs either.
That's too bad because there is a lot of potential because, like you said, you know, the human body can only withstand so much in that intense heat, and there is things that are going to start happening, like you getting dehydrated and probably passing out, and then your kidneys failing, and you're probably going to scratch your fucking eyes out or whatever, right? Like, who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
And most of all, what they did manage to do was just make the characters annoying by complaining, but it wasn't like a realistic complaint. It was a bitchy, like,
I'm hot. What am I going to do? And then they do something like totally stupid that's like, fucking idiots.
Wow. Yeah.
Hmm. So, yeah, that's 247 degrees
all Fahrenheit. Right. So, now I'm going to talk about another movie that was recommended last week by one of you guys, and that is the 1987 documentary Drive-In Madness, put out by Sub Rosa Video from the year 1987. Like I said before, this movie was recommended last week by Moods. It's pretty much just a film about the drive-in craze and in between the interviews with people like George Romero and James Caan and who else is in the Moods?
Tom Savini.
Is with George Romero and all that stuff. There's trailers from the old drive-in days. And if you guys know anything about the drive-ins, you know they're over the top. Way to go, Bonnie and Clyde. Was that Bonnie? Was that Clyde?
That's actually both of them. I muted my microphone there because I think the wife might have came home. So,
but
yeah.
So basically, just a documentary on the drive-in and the history of it and all that stuff. It's okay. Like Mood said last week, it's put out by Sub Rosa Video. So, the quality is not the best. They definitely ripped it straight from a VHS and slapped it on a DVD and released it. But you could get it for dirt cheap anyway. So if you guys want an interesting documentary about the drive-in, I'd check it out.
Do you have a drive-in, Jeremy?
I have two left. One got saved by the that Honda program that was a few years ago.
You motherfucker. Yeah. My drive-in was in that shit. Yeah.
One got saved, like I said, last August or around there. But the one that is ran by the people who do Flashback Weekend every year here in Chicago, that is the Midway drive-in, they did not get saved, but they're raising money now to try and keep it open and stuff like that. So,
hey, dude, I think you're clicking your mouse or something.
Yeah. I'll stop.
You might want to. Yeah.
Sorry. But it's interesting. I liked it. I gave it like a 7.5 out of 10. It's your typical documentary.
Yeah, I'm actually really depressed about when my drive-in is pretty much like shutting down, I think, because if you guys don't know, basically they have to upgrade to digital projectors if they want, you know, film studios to still, you know, supply them with, you know, the movies and stuff because we're still on, you know, actual film projectors. And like, I guess
fucking stupidest thing
I've
ever
so
heard.
It's so silly, man. It really fucking is depressing stupid to me. I actually told the owner, like, man, you should just turn this into one of those drive-ins that do like, you know, special screenings of like horror films and stuff like that, and like classic movies. Like, figure out a way to do that. And because
I was getting really worried, actually. In my city I live in, I actually still have a drive-in too, and they were selling it, but I actually knew the guy that bought it, and he bought it just to save it because, yeah, they were going to get like basically get rid of it. Like, the potential buyer that was going to buy it was just going to tear it down. And so my buddy, the guy that I know, he bought it to save it, you know, and that's fucking awesome. But if you have to upgrade to digital, it's so shitty, man.
Yeah, it's dude. So it's like I said. I think they said the projectors are like $100,000 or something.
$150.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, man, if that's what he has to do, I imagine he'll probably do it because he really enjoys it. So I respect that.
I think this is a sad day for Joe Bob Briggs.
Yes. Totally.
So, your turn, Moods.
Oh, is it my turn?
Alrighty. I think we're finished with that one, right, Jeremy?
Indeed. Go ahead, Moods.
Yeah, he was like, he gave it 7.5. So my third pick of the week is a film from, I want to say, 2007, and it is called Hack. It is a slasher film. This one actually... it's kind of surprised me, actually, because the very first person that you're introduced to in the film is Kane Hodder, but there's nowhere on this case saying that Kane Hodder's in the film, which I do respect that because they didn't use his name to sell it, you know? I enjoy that. But basically, it's about, I think it's like seven or eight college students, biology major students or whatever, led by Danica, what is her name again? Danica McKellar. And you know who that is, JP?
Oh, that's freaking...
That's Winnie from the Wonder Years.
Hold up. Okay. Let me give my respects to Winnie. Winnie was the first girl I ever had a crush on besides Topanga from Boy Meets World.
Nice. So she plays kind of like the nerd, right? She's kind of leading this expedition out to this this remote island. So basically, there was like a posting for... to go do some research on this island, and a bunch of people answered the ad or whatever that were in the college and stuff. And it's kind of funny because all the characters that answer the ad are probably the most unlikely people ever to answer this ad, you know? Like, she fits the character perfect because she's the biology major, kind of the dorky person. But then you've got like the punk rocker, you've got
In this film?
She is really actually hot. And you got like the sex addict, you got the druggies, you got all these people. It doesn't really make sense, the characters that would answer, but I think they're just answering it to go to this remote island. So anyways, they spark up a deal with this couple that actually owns a place on the island, and they're going to stay with them and, you know, do all the research and stuff. But what they don't know is that this couple that owns the island and lives on the island, they are obsessed with horror films and making their own horror films. So what these young college students don't know is that they are going to be the victims in their film that they're making on the spot, right? So basically the idea is this couple goes around and they kill people in various ways and they film it and they're making a film. I had a lot of fun with this movie, to be honest. It's not the greatest thing. I mean, it's not like a 10 out of 10 or anything. But for a slasher film, I do like the premise of it. And I really enjoyed like all the horror film talk in it. You know, another thing about this movie is that, you know, the girl's name, the girl from the island, her name is Mary Shelley. You know, there's a character like Mr. Bates and so on. There's a bunch of names that you'll obviously catch on. It's not meant to like, you know, slip by you or anything. They're right out there. They even talk about Mary Shelley in the film. So that was kind of cool. But they bring up a lot of different horror films. And basically what it is they're just making a homage horror film with real killings in their film. It's actually quite fun. There is some twists and turns in this one that's honestly...
Sounds like The Hills Run Red.
Yeah, there's some twists and turns in this that I actually didn't even see coming.
Always good.
But some of the setups with the killings and stuff are kind of poorly done. Like the way, you know, all of a sudden they're just, you know, this couple goes over here, you know, and then these people are over here. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, which is fine for like 80s slashers.
Yeah.
But you expect a little bit more in today's time.
The setups for the killings is just like, oh yeah, this couple went off into the bush and they're going to have sex. And I was like, well, fuck, man. Like, really? Yeah. That was awesome in 1981. This is fucking 2007. Jesus fucking Christ. Like, I don't know. But, you know, overall, it was actually still pretty enjoyable. There were some pretty decent kills. The kills were, you know, above average. They weren't, like, in A-plus area. But, you know, it was still a fun film. And like I said, the twists and turns kind of got me going. And having Winnie in the film was a big surprise. I hadn't seen her in a movie, especially a horror film
When you mentioned her name, I knew exactly who you was talking about, but I got so excited I couldn't spit it out.
Yeah, and it just she looked really fucking good in the movie. But, you know, overall, it's a fun one. It's definitely above average. William Forsythe is actually in the film. He plays like this this kind of like this land dweller or something like that. He's got real long hair and he appears to be he's going to be like, you know, the bad guy and shit like that. But he's actually, you know, kind of helping out these kids and stuff. And it's an interesting role for William Forsythe. His fucking accent in the film is brilliant, man. It's so good. But yeah,
actually, I own this film and haven't watched it yet. I didn't even realize this is the one you was talking about until I was like, man, I think I own a horror film with Danica McKellar in it. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I have it. I see it right now.
Well, give it a watch, man. See what you think. Yeah, like I said, it's not like the best thing I've ever watched in the world, but it's not the worst either. I've seen really piss poor slasher films made in the last 10 years. This is not one of them. It's not piss poor. But yeah, if I had to rate it, I'd probably just give it, you know, maybe a 7 out of 10.
It sounds about right based on your review.
I wish the kills were a little more hyped up. It's not even maybe even the kills. It's just I think it's the setups that kind of bugged me a little bit. But yeah, Hack. Check it out.
All right, JP, what's your next pick?
My next pick is a film from, shit, when did this come out? 2006. It's called The Covenant. This is a film that actually I seen before and I kind of liked a lot when I seen it when it came out. And upon revisit, I didn't find it, like, super awesome. Basically, it's a story. It's pretty much a witch story. But you have these, teenage kids who are, you know, look in their 20s. And there are four people, the Ipswich. It's a group that dates back to the Salem witch trials. They're pretty much the last families from the Ipswich tribe, and they're basically the descendants of that tribe. They're pretty like popular. They're like the cool kids in their town. And basically, they have these powers. They have these, you know, telekinetic type of, you know, spell type of powers that they get a taste of when they're 13, and then they get more as they get older. And then when they turn 21 or 20 or something, they fully ascend and they get this incredible power, but it's addictive. And basically the more they use it, the more it ages their body. So their body will age. But you know, they'll look, you know, 100 and only be like 40. Because this power ages their body, which is a great concept. And I think the concept to this film is super duper strong. But because it's a PG-13 film and it's kind of like Hollywood-y and it's, you know, made for a certain audience, and it's, you know, it's just too polished at times. And it kind of just has that look where you, like, you know that they're selling part of the movie. It just has that feel to it. It kind of is a bit annoying in that way. But actually, it was made by Rennie Harlan. You know who that is?
I do know who Rennie Harlan is.
That is the guy who made Prison and Elm Street 4 and Die Hard 2 and Cliffhanger and Deep Blue Sea.
Yep.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of interesting. But have you seen this film?
No, I have not seen this film, actually.
It's actually a really cool idea, and it's over-stylized, almost. That's kind of what it feels like, and it's way too polished. It's PG-13, and it has great ideas and concepts. It just doesn't – it like I said, it feels like it's just trying to be one of those PG-13 films that's going to get people to sit down and watch it. And it kind of sacrifices a lot of cool ideas to be that film. So I gave it a 6.5 out of 10. I liked it a lot more in the past, probably because in 2006, I was a little bit younger and I was kind of in that audience that it was trying to appeal to.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah, I've heard of this film. I've just never.
It's still worth a watch. It got cool ideas and stuff. Have you seen it, Jeremy?
I'm not a huge Pure Garbage for Kids Under 13 fan, so.
Dude, Insidious was.
Yes, Insidious considered is a ghost the film? Only good Pure Garbage for Kid Under 13 film, so.
Is it considered a ghost film? Because that would have been definitely on my top five.
I would think so. I don't know what else it would be.
Demon?
Isn't Demon and Ghost the same supernatural bullshit?
No. Well, it's the same supernatural bullshit, but it's not ghosts. Demons and ghosts are two different films. Yeah. Genre types.
All right, so I guess not. All right, am I next? All right. Yep. Next movie I'm going to talk about is a movie that I reviewed over on Body Bags, and that is the 1988 shot-on-video classic Redneck Zombies. Trauma Trash. I'm not that familiar with the shot on.
Your mic muted.
Thanks, JP. See, it's such a habit that when I cough, I fucking mute my mic. But, I'm not that into shot on video films. It's actually the first one I ever watched, to be honest.
Nor are you that into trauma, from what I understand. Correct,
even though I own like 40 trauma movies. But, film's basically about the army has this chemical waste that they're trying to get rid of, and this guy is driving in this Jeep trying to get rid of this chemical waste on the back of his truck. This dude is a total fucking douchebag idiot, like you see in most shot-on-video films from what I've learned. Toxic waste falls off the side of the truck. He goes down to get it and is held at gunpoint by four rednecks who are complete idiots, your typical fucking, you know, dumb rednecks who say, you have to leave this, you know, they make a still out of it and make moonshine. They think it's a still because they're stupid rednecks trying to make moonshine. So they leave it and they make moonshine out of it, and everyone who drinks it turns into zombies. There's baby zombies, there's kid zombies, a whole bunch of extras in this low budget garbage that is Redneck Zombies. Have to give in major props for the gore. You know, they had some pretty awesome gore effects for being a low-budget shot-on-video film. Have to give them that. I think that's a common theme with these shot-on-video movies, that they're going to be pretty fucking gory, if I'm correct. Right, Moots?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hit and miss sometimes. Sometimes they're a lot more gory than others. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But Redneck Zombies does kind of stick out with that. They did a pretty good job with the effects in that.
It's a lot of like splatter type gore that I've noticed in the like shot on video type films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends, man. If you check out films like Cannibal Campout, you know, Steve would know what I'm talking about, but that movie has some pretty gnarly gore in it too, man, and shit like that. But then you get other ones that are just like, you can tell that they couldn't even afford the $5 for some red dye. You know, it's like, it's that bad.
Good thing I haven't ran into any of those.
Fucking Redneck Zombies. I love the film, man. It just has so much charm to it because it's just so fucking bad. It's awesome. It
is very, very, very bad.
I've always loved the premise, though, with the moonshine. Because, like, is that not a perfect setup for rednecks? It's so fucking perfect, man. I think it's just great.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually seen this film, too, and it was actually the first trauma film I seen besides when I was in like middle school and seen like half of a Toxic Avenger, one of them. So I don't know, man. I'm not like, judging by like the three trauma films I've seen, I'm not like a huge fan of those films. Like I think they're a little too immature and stupid sometimes. But Redneck Zombies was kind of fun. It's been a while. I did like the green moonshine. It was kind of cool.
It's fun.
Should not be taken seriously.
Did it feel like it ran a bit too long? How long is this?
86 minutes.
and it feels, I remember it feeling long.
You know what's actually kind of crazy about Redneck Zombies? It's it actually had like a minor theatrical release.
Eh? Really?
Yeah.
I did know that. I totally forgot about that, but I
no shit. Remember. They actually showed it in a few theaters. Like it's pretty crazy.
That is fucking insane. That's funny as hell.
It might even be the very first shot on video to have a minor theatrical release.
It is, I think, because I remember. Yeah. I think I remember that them. That's why I heard that.
Yeah.
Did they actually mention that on the DVD?
The intro is fucking hilarious with Lloyd Kaufman and the director.
Yeah, it is.
So fucking funny, but
yeah.
I actually found that film in a Walmart dump bin, which I found really odd to see a trauma film in there.
Yeah, that is weird, actually. Yeah, I haven't seen that
in my years of hunting.
Interesting.
Huh.
What would you rate that?
That's a rough one. How about a 6?
Oh, so I thought. I would have probably said 5.5.
Yeah, shot on video films are hard to rate because you know they're bad, but you still like. I'm a big fan of them. Like, there is some that I dislike. Obviously, there's some bad ones, but there's some really fun ones. But they're just hard to rate.
They're meant to be bad.
Yeah, like it's shot on video budget, like micro budget, like no budget.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sometimes I think they're meant to be a little too bad. Like I wish they would like tone it down a little bit, but. Have you moods? You like shot on video? Have you seen Hell's Highway yet? Because that's one I recommend to people.
No, I haven't seen that one though.
It's actually pretty cool. I really enjoyed that one. Check it out, everybody out there, if you're interested in shot on video.
Cool. So are we on to pick of the week now? I'm just not used to going. I'm not used to going first. It's fucking up my
your mojo.
It's. It seems like, it just seems like the rotation's off for some reason.
It is off. It's different.
Yeah, it is weird. Okay. So, for my pick of the week, I was kind of not really struggling with the pick of the week, but, I mean, this was an obvious choice, but I watched a lot of shitty movies this week, so this one obviously just has to be my pick of the week, and that is the newly released 2014 release of Never Sleep Again. The Elm Street Legacy Blu-ray.
Dude, I got a comment on. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but it almost felt like people were reporting on this as if it was like a brand new thing. Like
I know it is weird.
Yeah. It was so weird. Like everybody was talking about it like it was some like new documentary. I'm like, you do realize this has been out forever. Like this is my favorite documentary that's for horror films.
Yeah, this came out.
It was just weird. It was like a big deal.
I think originally came out in 2010, right? I think that's when the DVD came out.
Yeah, probably. Like,
I think it was 2010.
It might have been 9-ish. It was before the remake, I know that.
Yeah, I think it might have been 2010. But, I mean, most people out there have probably seen Never Sleep Again. It's obviously a documentary covering the entire Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, and it's done so well. They honestly, I just loved hearing... You know, all the cast members talk and telling stories.
They got everybody except for Johnny Depp, man, I swear.
Yeah, and that was the thing. They really did have everybody on this. It was pretty amazing. And I just, you know, I've seen this before. Just watching it again, I'm just like, oh, this is why I love – this is why Nightmare on Elm Street is my favorite franchise. Like, it just – I could watch this documentary again tonight if I wanted to. And it's 4 hours long. 4 hours of goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I really like the fact that they even talked about Freddy's Nightmares in it. You know, they had a little section, you know, about Freddy's Nightmare, the TV series. And it's actually pretty funny hearing them talk about, like, how bad that show really was and stuff. And I thought that was pretty comical, actually, how they would purposely shoot, like, nude scenes and stuff, knowing that they weren't ever going to be able to use them because it was on TV. I thought that was fucking hilarious, man. But they said, like, you know, like, the first few episodes of the show was actually really good. And then it just kind of got real silly, right? Well, you remember that, HJP?
Yeah, we actually did a little research on the series because, I mean, I didn't really know about it until, like, a long time into life. And it's kind of like a hard series to track down because it doesn't have a DVD release. It kind of sucks. We've talked about that before, but it really does suck.
It fucking does blow, man. Someone's got to eventually put this out, but I remember seeing the VHSs back in the day for Freddy's Nightmares, and I was like, what the fuck? I could never, like, I was young, right? And I was going, mm-hmm. I was so confused. I'm like, are these sequels? Or like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like,
I told a similar story to that.
Yeah, yeah, I could never figure it out either. And then years later, you obviously figure it out that it was a TV series and, you know, kind of put two and two together. I'm like, oh yeah, kind of like that Friday the 13th series, right? But yeah, I think they did this is just a fantastic documentary by the same people that did Crystal Lake Memories, obviously. Same type of format. It's very structured. You know, they talk about all the films in chronological order. I don't really know what to say about it. It's just brilliant. There's just so much information on here that I just loved hearing.
I'll ask you, what would who's your favorite character out of the Elm Street series?
My favorite character out of the Elm Street series. I mean, the first one that comes to my mind is always Kincaid.
I brought it up because Kincaid is even awesome as an interview, man. That dude is so fucking cool. He's my favorite character.
I like when he's telling people, you know, like, yeah, you know, I'm in Nightmare 4, but he's like, seriously, if you're going to go see me in the theater, walk right by the popcorn stand, do not get a drink, walk into the theater, and, you know, because if you stand in line, you're going to miss my performance. He fucking dies off so quick. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, man. That always pissed me off about Elm Street 4, man. They kill him so fast. All the survivors died.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like how he was saying how, like, they wanted him to play like a buff guy, but he really wasn't, but he pulled it off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he pulled off being a big, strong, like, buff dude, even though he kind of wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
He's like, I'm gonna kick your ass. Try to come at me with the syringe and stuff, man. I fucking love Kincaid.
What was the whole story with, like, why didn't they have Johnny Depp?
Well, you know, I actually was going to mention, I think that if they could get a hold of Johnny Depp, he probably would have did it, but they probably had to go through like managers and agents and shit, and they probably just never even told him about it, because he came back to do a cameo in part 6. And if you're gonna do that, I mean, and Johnny Depp just seems like the type of guy that would embrace that, you know, character and that thing for his career, unlike, you know, Kevin Bacon.
Well, exactly, right? And I remember hearing a story about Wes Craven, because originally Wes Craven wanted to, you know, get Johnny Depp back for New Nightmare.
Oh, that is right. Did they talk about it in the documentary?
They don't, actually, but I remember hearing this story and Wes Craven saying that he was afraid to ask him because he didn't want to be rejected by him, right?
And then years later, Johnny Depp said, oh, why didn't you ask me? I would have totally did that.
He said he would have done it in a heartbeat. And I was like, that sucks, man. Like, Wes Craven must have felt like a fucking idiot after that, man. Like, I mean, Johnny Depp is a mega star, but he's also a real person and he's very loyal. I mean, you know, he does indie films still and stuff. And
yeah, he's honestly seems like a person who, you know, one of the few people who hasn't sold their soul, you know, quote unquote, so to speak, in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would have been interesting to have Johnny Depp in New Nightmare. I think that would have been something else. But yeah, I don't know. Just a fantastic documentary. Just
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. It's my favorite documentary also. I absolutely love it. I couldn't say anything bad about it at all. Just too fucking good. Awesome. If you've never seen this before, check it out.
It's
Pick
a must
it up.
Watch. And it's you a- did the smart thing, because I remember when I picked up Elm Street Legacy like 2 years ago, you was like, man, I really need to pick that up. And you just held off long enough till a fucking Blu-ray came out. I was kind of bummed about that. I was like, God damn it. Cause the DVD was kind of expensive even.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to get for a good price.
Yeah. I basically paid the same price for the Blu-ray
probably paid for the DVD.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The DVD was so expensive. And that was one of the reasons why I, you know, put off getting it for so long. And then decided one day, fuck it, I'm going to get it. And oh, well, there's a Blu-ray coming out. it fucking worked out pretty good. So, but yeah, Never Sleep Again. Amazing. Check that out.
I was going to wait for Jeremy to pass the Mike to my pick of the week, but I guess I'll do it myself. So my pick of the week is The Lost from 2006.
Ooh, Jeff Ketchum. Jack Ketchum. Sorry.
Yeah. So I went into this one like I didn't really even know. I didn't even pay attention really that it was a Jack Ketchum film. I've only seen like a handful of this dude's like written works come to film, you know, because I know he's like an author. He's not like a filmmaker. I guess he kind of is. He's done some screenplays and shit. But man, this guy really fucking knows how to do like real life horror.
Yes, he does, man. This is a really good movie.
It has this. It's just such an. It's so like unconventional. It's like it's its own like the narrative is so like original and just like it's its own thing that it's kind of like you can't set this one up in like simple just like, you know, characters go here and do this and that's the film. Mm-hmm. It's really has a lot of things going on, but basically you follow this kind of rebel type kind of odd character like right away, like right in the opening, there's like his name's like Ray Pye or something. And it says that there was this guy named Ray Pye who put, you know, crushed beer cans in his boots to make himself taller and seem like more, you know, a high, you know, it's kind of weird. Like it's very original and it really is its own like story. I've never seen anything kind of like this in terms of similarities. Like I've not seen films that are like similar to these type of, I was kind of like just taken back by the whole way that this film played out. So before I like run around in too many circles, this one day, this 19-year-old basically murders, some girls and
some lesbians.
Nah, but that was the thing. They wasn't lesbians.
Yes, but we think they're lesbians.
No, he thinks they're lesbians. Yeah, which I thought was also interesting because he never finds out that they weren't. He just kind of, you know, and it was weird that he wanted to kill them because they was lesbians in the first place. So he just basically, you know, it flashes forward 4 years later and you kind of just follow him through his day-to-day activities as he's, you know, you think that this film is going to be set up in the way where the police know that he did it because they, you know, kind of say that they know, but there's a lack of evidence. And you think that it's going to be one of those films where the police are trying to, you know, solve this investigation and the kid is trying to, you know, weasel his way out of it, and it's going to play more along the lines of that being the narrative, but it's not. That's really just a side, you know, plot to the main story. And the main story is just following this guy around in his day-to-day activities, and basically as he, you know, gets worse and worse in his, you know, the type of person he is, and it all, you know, just leads up to a shit ton of violence. God damn, there's a lot of violence in the third act of this film, and it is damn crazy good violence.
It's a long film.
It didn't feel like it. It really did not feel long to me at all. I didn't even realize it was long until I looked at the IMDb page. Oh man, dude, what do you got? Like, I don't really. Go ahead.
I haven't seen it in a while, actually, but I do remember it being just batshit crazy, though, and really enjoying the structure of the film and just how, like you said, it's very, did you say unconventional?
Yeah.
That's a good word for it. Totally. But I really enjoyed the story, man. And it's kind of almost like a downer film. I mean,
oh, it's a big downer, just like, you know, stuff like The Girl Next Door. This is a very depressing,
yeah,
and just, you know, like the destroyed youth type of film, you know, like totally. Bad youth. And you know, the thing is, like, this almost feels like it's one of those films that should have been, like, a main topic, because I feel like I'm not really doing it justice, because I'm trying to jump around and cover all kind of angles, because, you know, I don't want to spend a half hour on this, you know, my pick of the week, and it's just, like, I'm not really explaining and properly, you know, going through this film like it deserves. So I'm just going to say this. It's a downer. It's also, you know, done, you know, very, like, very unconventional, and the third act is very violent, and it's surprising violence too. It's just, and the performance is really great, and the characters are really, at least Ray Pai is really unique and fleshed out, and kind of just it. This film feels like it does whatever it wants, and there's no excuses or anything in the way of doing what it wants, and it's very true to just telling a story that it wants to tell.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's my pick of the week. 8.5 out of 10.
8.5 out of 10. Ooh, interesting. All right. So,
did you not like it or something?
Oh no, I loved it. I thought it was pretty good. It's not that big of a, you know, bloody gore fest until the end, but it's a really good. It's a really good character study film for sure. I haven't seen in years, but.
It's not really about the gore of the violence. It's about, I mean, the gore of the blood. It's about the, you know, extremeness of the violence and just how, like, bam, the violence is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right. So, my pick of the week. It's a film that Moods has been saying for 3 months to watch. And the moment of truth finally happened. And I finally watched.
If anybody is familiar with this program, then they know what this film is.
And that, of course, is the 2011 film Adam Chaplin is my pick of the week, of course, because this movie is bloody fucking good fun. So, basically, story follows this guy named Adam who lives in this this country, this fictional country that is called Heaven Valley, I think it's called, right, Moods?
Yeah.
So, Adam has this wife, she dies, and he starts to find out how she got knocked off. And as he's trying to solve this case about how she died, he runs across this mafia boss whose name is something Denny something. Adam, who is, you know, pretty pissed off about how his wife dies, summons this inner demon inside of him, and he tries to solve the murder of his wife. And it's very bloody, gory, crazy effects. It's just fucking fantastic.
It's just basically a fucking it's like a revenge film. You know, this mafia boss offs his wife because his wife owed them money. Or something like that, but you know, it wasn't very just. Like, they fucking burn her, man. It's fucking brutal. But anyways, Adam, he comes back for revenge and summons up this demon and gets like fucking superpowers from it. And like the fucking scenes in this movie, dude, like when he's like punching through people, like fucking breaking art, like it's so over the top, bloody,
it's
and
like
gory.
Dead Alive,
it's just amazing.
Gory,
it is, man, and it's so fun, man. And the mob boss, fuck his name, but he's kind of like very unique, like the character, like how he has to live off the, you know, he's like got these IV tubes, and it's fucking weird, man. I mean, he kind of looks nasty, like his head kind of looks like Jason's head in a way and shit, and oh man, it's batshit crazy. If you like fucking
Dead Alive type batshit crazy movies.
Yeah, it doesn't the atmosphere feel so unique to that film? Like, it's, like, very so fictional. It kind of feels, like, comic booky in a way. Like, it just has this weird feel to the film that's, you know, it's like its own movie, you know? I don't know. There's something kind of unique about that
film. Yeah, I remember,
really,
like, when it came out in the Region 2 release, it was, like, a huge deal. Everyone was talking about it when it first came out, but how it had to get a release here. And Anatomy Films picked it up. And well deserved. Yep. It's a fantastic fucking fun blood fest.
Can I comment on something really quick?
Sure.
this film, I think, has like this is, has to do with marketing, and I guess just, you know, wanting to see your film be seen by people. I think that you don't go with a name like Adam Chaplin. It's just unappealing, and it just, you know, to me, obviously I'll watch anything, but to the average consumer, it just does not set. You better have some cool artwork, because
some cool artwork.
I mean, the cover is just him covered in blood. It's fucking gnarly, but you'll see why, because he's literally covered in blood the entire movie, because he fucks shit up
big time.
Like, it's, you just don't want to give anything away. You just kind of want to let someone watch the film and just enjoy it for what it is.
Pretty basic description of it.
It's fucking awesome. Like, I bought the Region 2 release when it came out because the hype, man, everyone's talking about it. Like, I remember even Tat was like, this movie's fucking awesome. And I was like, wow, this movie must be really good if Tat actually likes something. So that really piqued my interest. And so I checked it out, and I was just like, fucking, I'll never forget it, man. I was just blown away by it.
It's like, good.
It floored me. I hadn't seen anything like that, and, you know, and I was like, wow, this fucking, it's just so over the top, like Dead Alive kind of deal. And
it's fun. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
Wow. The only question remaining about Adam Chaplin is, how long will it take for you guys to convince me to watch it?
You'll watch it.
I don't know. Can you get the Region 1 release for cheap right now?
It's like $15.
Oh, really? Shitty.
I'll get it eventually.
Yeah, definitely pick it up, though, man. It's a good one.
So, yeah, that should be everything with our pick of the weeks. I hope you guys enjoyed that. So, now we're going to be talking about our film of the week, and that is the 1981/1982, as JP says,
/1983, as IMDb says, sometimes.
Sometimes. That is the supernatural ghost film, The Entity. I guess I could give a little basic information about this film because you know, not many people have watched it. It's basically a ghost story. It stars fucking Barbara Hursley, who is in her house alone one night, and she gets grabbed by this thing and thrown on her bed and raped. And
would you call this thing a perhaps entity?
There you go. Way to go, JP. Way to make a pun. Way to make the pun already in the synopsis. But she gets raped by this this entity or this ghost, and of course no one believes her, as they do in every fucking supernatural ghost movie. And the film is basically about her mental state and her just keep on getting fucked by this ghost and having no control over what this thing's going to do next. But unlike most ghosts, this thing is not ashamed to, you know, show that it's there and, you know, whenever you want to call it out, it will most likely come and fuck shit up. And this ghost...
You almost get the vibe that it will if it feels like it.
Yeah, but
like
this ghost is fucking stupid as all hell. He fucking shows up at the end of this film in this fake replica of the...
Don't, like, spoil that.
How am I spoiling the ending by saying...
I don't know. It sounds like you're going into that territory.
No, I'm talking about how he shows up at fucking a replica house. It's like...
Well, the idea behind that was he doesn't just, like, watch her. He just appears when she is in a vulnerable state. And the idea was to create a familiar setting so that she would be comfortable, let her guard down, and he would show up. But, okay, so this film, pretty much all you got to say is this woman is being repeatedly raped and molested by this ghost, and the people around her... basically, you know, deal. Sorry, I was having some technical difficulties, but
yeah, we noticed.
She involves the help of some parapsychologists, and it's a very simple setup and very simple story, and it's more about performances and just pure terror, man. It really is just like.
Man, one of my favorite things about this movie, though, is the usage of the soundtrack. Oh, yeah. Like, that fucking hard punch.
I swear that was the first thing the main thing.
Oh, fuck me, man. The first time I watched this movie, I was like, that has to be the most powerful effect in the like when that entity is fucking her and it's just pounding her, she's getting tossed around in the room, and it's just that soundtrack works so perfect. Like I've never
It's so powerful.
It is so perfect, powerful and perfect.
It like puts you on edge and just nervous, man. Just this nervous feeling, and you just know as soon as you hear that first thump that it's just like it's actually bad.
Scary when you watch it. Like it's fucking like when you put yourself into her shoes, like you know, you can't see what this thing is doing to you. No, it's just fucking that's so scary, man.
You sort of get to see what it's doing to her later on.
Yeah, you do, but I mean, like, I mean, when it first happens and stuff, like, she all of a sudden is just getting tossed around, and like, you know, it's fucking crazy, man. But the usage of the music is just amazing.
I think that's one of the strongest things about this film.
I think honestly, the performances in this film are really well done. Like, it's her name, Barbara Hershey. She's the lead in it.
I like the scientist guy too, even though I mean the psychiatrist, yeah, even though he's a bit of a douchebag.
I think that I like the idea because she goes and sees this doctor, and of course the doctor is very comforting, and he's like, you know, you're not crazy, but obviously there's something wrong with this story you're telling me, and I like the idea that for a long while she is open to the fact that maybe there is something mentally wrong with her, and it's not. You know, and it is like something with her head, and I think that's a more realistic approach to it, because let's face it, I mean you might be second guessing yourself.
Totally, 100%. But at the same time, like, you do get the feeling that she's completely convinced that there is something there.
Of course she is, but she's also open to the idea that maybe it's possible that it is in her head.
I think it totally works, because that's real. That's reality.
Yeah.
Anybody that this is happening to is going to question that. It's a natural instinct. You're going to question this, like, this shit can't be happening. But she knows what just happened to her. She just got fucking fucked, like, and thrown around. Like, you can't deny the fact. Like, she literally has
marks on her. Yeah, but they still don't fucking believe her when she shows, like, those marks.
Yeah, I mean, that's typical doctor shit, though,
that's
right? They're going to question that
shit. People shit. I'm naturally a skeptic, dude. Like, if somebody that I don't know comes up to me and says that they've been raped by a ghost and they can show me marks and stuff, I'm going to be like, wow, that's pretty crazy. But I'm not buying that shit at all.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that angle works so well. I really like how they developed that whole angle. And I mean, it's quite obvious that, you know, she was correct.
It's obvious to us because we see it happen. But it put yourself in his position. He doesn't know her. He doesn't know anything about her. She just comes in and says this story. There is a hint of belief in him after a certain extent, but he is manipulated and convinced that, you know, by the other doctors that it's all nonsense.
I think one of the most powerful scenes in the film is the scene where she gets raped in front of her kids.
Oh man, that is just
I think that's actually one of the most insane scenes in like any type of film, because it's just so fucking, it's so devastating on so many levels. Like, she's being attacked by an entity that she doesn't know why, what the fuck's going on, but in front of her kids and like witnesses, like, this is really fucking happening. So powerful. I think that's one of the best scenes in any type of ghost film I've ever fucking seen, man. It works on so many levels, and it just really shows you that, you know, it's not in her head. This is really true. You know, this is really happening. I think it's so awesome.
And also, I think that right now is a good time to point out that how strong of a woman this character is portrayed. And it's not in a like typical like, oh, I'm a strong woman type character. It really is just like, you completely buy that, like, she is just this like strong person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she has to be, because she's a single mama of two. You know, she's a working person, and, you know, that angle works. You know, she has to be strong.
Really, really shines through.
Yeah, it's really good.
Totally.
And I thought towards the end, with her kids a little bit, you know, I thought the ending was really.
That's my biggest complaint about this film. I'm glad you brought that up.
It tells you that, you know, this stuff still happens every once in a while. It's like,
well, no, see, that wasn't the problem that I had. I had the problem with the whole third act, like how everything went down. Like, it just, it seemed a bit dated to me, and it just felt like it kind of took away from what the core of the film was about. But at one point I was like, I am really surprised that this film did not try to, you know, capitalize on the true story angle. And then at the end, of course, yeah. I was like, oh, you know, but I like, you know, this is obviously, based on some event, some woman's, you know, has said that this has happened to her, which I was actually familiar with this type of story. I wasn't familiar with an exact person, but I did hear from other people about this type of story. And I thought the way that it ended was the final ending. I thought that it was very fitting, actually.
I think the whole family aspect of her story is like, okay, so basically in the last 45 minutes of the film, you don't see her kids at all or anything like that. And I guess it's like, I don't know. I just felt like it just had an ending. It's like, okay, this is what happened. The ending's, you know, kind of like the Poltergeist ending a little bit, but the Poltergeist ending was at least satisfying. This one is just like, okay, it's just like an open-ended thing.
I think it's because it's, yeah, I understand the angle with the family, but they try to isolate the kids because it's I think it's more about keeping them safe, right? It's more about her and trying to fix this problem that she has. And, I mean, having the kids around, it doesn't seem like a decision that everybody or that we would make. We would probably, you know, put our kids somewhere else and get them out of this danger, right? Especially considering, you know, they fucking saw firsthand what's going on. You know,
I thought it was a bit odd that the woman didn't bring up the fact that this thing, it seems very, very disgusting and evil, and it has like no boundaries. And I have two little daughters here. Like, I thought that that was going to be a bigger reason to get them the hell out of there. And I think that that would have been a way good reason to explain away the kids and get them out of there. But also, I expected the son to have kind of a bigger role, and I'm not saying that's negative or anything. It just seemed like that was the way the movie was going.
I gotta say, one of the a scene in the film that just kind of always brings a smile to my face is the reaction on her boyfriend's face when he sees her getting
destroyed. In the hospital. He's like, "What do I do, human? I have to leave." It's like, "Why do you have to leave?"
Because he totally doesn't fucking, you know, he doesn't trust, doesn't believe her and shit. And then he sees it happen and it's just like the fucking look on his face.
Yeah, and then he leaves. It's like, don't you think he needs you right now? No, I have to leave.
Yeah, I know. It's just such a fucking, it's brutal, man. But another scene in the film I really enjoy is the bedroom scene with her laying naked on the bed.
Giant muff.
Yeah, which is actually all prosthetics, right? Oh, really? That's actually not her. That's not her real body.
You couldn't tell by the neck. It's like the Kevin Bacon Friday the 13th thing.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job with the body.
Yeah,
looked pretty good.
It was pretty good.
The animatronics or whatever you want to call them for the, you know, how they did the hands on the boobs.
That's really good.
Yeah, really fucking cool stuff, man. I thought that was a really nice touch. And, you know, yeah, I thought that was really cool, man. Really cool scene.
I'm going to be honest, dude. I think that this one was like, every time, like, you know, it really is just sad.
Technical difficulties.
Dude, we missed everything you said there. It went all electronic on you again.
Okay, I was saying that I really did like go super on edge every time I knew an attack was coming up. And as soon as you fucking heard that music and you knew it was beginning, you know, the rape was beginning. And it's just like, oh my God, it's so uncomfortable.
Oh, I know. Like I said, that soundtrack or those hard hitting drums and shit, it's devastating, man. It's so perfect. I mean, when you think of films and soundtracks that fit moments in films so well, like, I mean, I can't help but think of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so fitting. It's perfect. Fucking works so well.
The little girl one of the daughters is actually the little girl from Amityville Horror. Did you guys notice that?
Really?
I probably have. Yeah. Maybe not this time around.
Yeah, but I probably noticed it.
I think I may have looked that up actually before. I'm one of those people that when I'm watching films, I'm always trying to figure out who everybody is and where they're from and fucking, yeah. So, but I don't know. Overall, like, what would you guys rate this film? I reviewed this on my 81 series, and I don't remember exactly what I gave it, but I know I gave a really, really high rating to it because this was actually...
Even though it came out in 82 and 83...
This movie actually came out in 81, though, eh?
Country that I seen, it was 82 and above. I didn't see one country for 81.
It's interesting. But
what did you rate it on your 81 series?
I actually don't remember, man. I think it was something like 8.5 or 9 out of 10, I think. And actually, at that point, it was like the longest review I'd done for any film. I think the review was like 11 or 12 minutes for this fucking movie. I know I spent time talking about, you know, the soundtrack and the way it just, it's so perfect.
That thumping
and shit,
is but, just insane, dude.
Really
quickly, the first night I tried watching this, I was like dead and I was starting to fall asleep and I knew I wasn't going to be able to, you know, stay up and watch it. I had to work the next day and stuff. But there's these long moments of like silence when she's like, you know, leading up to, you know, whatever she's doing. And then all of a sudden this fucking thump comes in and I swear to God, it scared the shit out of me, dude. I was falling asleep and then it just started and I was like, ah,
yeah, man.
Like, what's going on?
This is one movie that shakes my fucking house. I have a pretty good, you know, sound system downstairs when I watch my shit and it fucking shakes the house.
Coming
really
from a
good,
DVD,
man.
It's surprising.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Fuck, it sounds so good, man.
This film is genuinely scary.
Yeah, it really is, man. It's just the whole idea of not knowing or why this is happening.
And the description, we didn't mention this, but the description of, it's brief and it's not very detailed, but you get a pretty good idea of like what this woman feels and the presence and it's frightening the mm-hmm. way she describes this thing.
Totally agree.
Totally.
I think the only problem I have with the entire film is I felt that the whole ending, the, you know, liquid helium and stuff, I felt that to be really dated and very just, I didn't like it. But that's the only problem I really had with this film.
I don't really have a major problem with it. I think it's more silly than anything.
It's just, you know, it's out just of seems a little, tone with the rest of the film to me.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, instead of just getting, you know, I think the logical thing to do would basically to get just fucking go somewhere else. But, you know, they try to like, you know,
I don't think that would matter, you know, because it attacks her in the car. It attacks her at that place.
I know, totally. Right. And I understand why they tried this and shit like that. But yeah, the car scene, fucking crazy. But yeah, I understand
very
what they're trying to do with it, but it does seem it's a little over the top and I think it was a little risky, you know, to use an ending like that, but I don't know. I don't hate it.
It's
just an interesting choice. Cause obviously the whole film is leaning towards one way and then it just kind of, okay, let's do this, you know, for an ending. Kind of, it is weird. But that's just my thoughts.
Yes.
I gave it an 8.5 out of 10, though.
Well, it was my number 4 pick on my list. I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
I think, as a ghost film, it's one of the best ever made. As a pure ghost film, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, it has to be, like, as a representation of a ghost film, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
It's long. It's 2 hours and 5 minutes long. So,
but you know, it's funny.
It doesn't feel that long.
And that is one thing I did say in my review. You know, for a film that's 125 minutes, it definitely doesn't feel because it keeps you. It's intense because you're anticipating that fucking soundtrack, man. And you know,
it really
keeps you
is
on
intense.
It, you know, and so it just kind of you know holds you in this bind, you know, and the first time I watched The Entity, I could not believe, and I looked at the time, the running time, I was like, holy shit, man. I don't see too many movies that long.
By the way, this film starts off
right off the bat.
I was like kind of, I like messaged Moods and Jeremy, and I was like, whoa, this, you know, started off pretty crazy, and it doesn't really let up.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all. Right off the bat.
And that's why I think the length isn't a huge deal, is because it goes right away and it keeps you on edge the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the entity.
Anybody else, I was actually
the only thing I want to say is we kind of pick these films by almost, I wouldn't say random, but we just kind of look at our titles and throw out an idea, and I think this one was a good pick.
Yeah, it's definitely one I've never even watched, so it's good to get those.
Yeah, I just picked it up one day. I heard a few good things, and
yeah, it's a film that I've watched a few times now, and it never gets old to me, man. It's an exciting film.
I definitely couldn't watch this film every, you know, once. This is like a once every few years for me. It's too intense.
This is the third time. It's the third time I've watched. Well, I mean, I did my series last year, but I watched it after. Yeah, I think I've watched this movie three times in like the last year. It's crazy.
How do you do that, man?
I don't know. Honestly,
fucking.
But I mean, I've watched it twice for specific reasons, mm-hmm. right? You know, once to do a review, once for this, and
yeah.
You know, so I mean, whatever. It is what it is, right?
Yeah.
So
that is episode number 10. The 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. I am your host, Jeremy, aka NES Ruler 20. You can follow me on my channel at youtube.com/NES Ruler 22. You can follow JP, aka the man who hates Pee Wee Herman, at youtube.com/DoubleShotJ. And you can follow the man Moods himself, youtube.com/Moods616, or just click the subscribe button right below this video. So, thanks again, everybody, for watching. I hope you guys enjoyed this show. It was a lot of fun. Lots of definitely interesting news. That full moon segment definitely is interesting, and I'm curious to see how that plays out as time goes on with Killjoy 5 and all those other flicks. So, thanks again, everybody, for listening. And we should
VampCon.
Only one question, guys.
VampCon.
Where the hell is Mr. Graves from Ninth Grade?
Yeah.
Where are you?
If anybody knows any information, please contact JP at 1-800 JP hates Pee Wee Herman. So thank you again, everybody, for listening. I want to talk to you guys again next week with the double bill of My Bloody Valentine and My Bloody Valentine 3D. So we'll talk to you guys again next week. See you guys later.
Peace.